is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! And a great run. Fires down the middle. It is intercepted by Micah Hyde. Intercepted. Tre Day. Tre'Davious White. He's in trouble. He is sacked. Jordan Poyer came unblocked. It is Jerry Hughes who brings him down. What a big play there. McCoy cuts to the right. Outrunning everybody. 10, 5. Touchdown! Touchdown! Touchdown, Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts.
Hello there, good afternoon, welcome to the show, the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa, live at One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Donald Jones, special guest in studio, Lorenzo Alexander is here, fresh off his little holiday in Jamaica.
Yeah.
How was Jamaica, man?
It was great.
was it good?
It was real good. Yeah, really enjoyed it. You know, was out there for 4 days. About 4 days. Me and my wife celebrated 10 years anniversary. Or 10 years of marriage, and just really had a great time just kind of hanging out, had some other friends out there, saw the sights, hung out with the people, ate some good food, and chilled on the beach. So it was good times.
You told me you went bobsledding.
I went bobsledding, but it wasn't like real deal bobsledding. Yeah. You know, obviously with the Cool Runnings movie that most people know
about.
We watched it last night with the kids. Because they wanted to go to Jamaica, so we'll give you a little taste of it through by watching the movie.
That's terrible.
Yeah. Hey, man.
Hey, watch the movie. You want to go? Watch the movie.
Right, watch the movie. You get to understand what we did, you know. So I actually have like this kind of like rail system they set up, almost like a roller coaster, but you can control it.
Yeah.
And it's pretty fun. It goes pretty good. We had some film of it. Maybe I'll tweet you and show you just how it looked. It's pretty kind of fun.
You know, not too far from here, Lake Placid, New York, 5 hours, 6 hours.
Right.
You can actually do a bobsled run in the snow or on the ice.
Really?
Yeah. Really?
I would go do that.
At the Olympic site in Lake Placid, 1980 Olympics.
Okay. We should go do that.
The kids would love it.
Yeah,
Lake
I'm going to go.
Lake Placid is a cool place.
Oh, yeah, I'm doing it. I'm there. Yeah.
Now, where is that exactly?
Adirondack. So it's
Adirondack. Okay.
East from here, a little bit up north.
How far?
Five and a half hours, maybe six to get to Lake Placid.
That's a little trip.
That's a trip. Especially with the kids.
That's a trip.
With the kids.
You made it sound like it was a hop, skip, and a jump. go about 10 minutes down the road and it's right there.
Five, six hours with kids are turning into like eight.
Man, that's eight easy.
Yeah.
Couple stops. It's a full drive.
It's a full day drive. But it's the Olympic site from the 1980 and I think 1932 Winter Olympics right there in Lake Placid.
Wow.
They have a ski jump. If you're interested in that, you can do that. You don't want to do that.
That's above my pay grade.
Probably a violation of your contract, too, I would think.
If I got hurt, it would be.
Yeah.
Caught.
If I got hurt.
Right. Yeah. That's just, you know.
Lorenzo is in studio with us for the first hour of the show. And you're welcome to join us as well. 803-0550, the number, and toll free 1-888-552-550. We do have some football topics to discuss with Lorenzo. But we did take note, Lorenzo, and Donald is an avid Twitter follower of you in particular, of your mode of transportation to Jamaica over the weekend. Suffice to say, we were not impressed. what were you flying? You were in coach with a bunch of.
I'm a regular dude. I think what people assume because I'm a professional athlete and we make a decent living that I got to break bread every time I go somewhere. I want my money when I'm done playing right?
I hear you.
You know, you got to live a certain way because when I'm done, I'm going to be flying coach because I'm not getting the same paycheck. So I'm fine with it. My wife was fine with it. She actually booked the tickets.
Are you really fine with it? Because you were kind of complaining.
Well,
on
I was
Twitter
fine with
it.
I wasn't fine with the person sitting next to me. And his lack of respect for not even hygiene. He didn't smell bad, but respect for people's bubble.
Space.
He was in my space. He was he was sitting in my seat. And that was the worst thing was is that he didn't allow his wife to sit between us, who was a smaller person.
Right.
I mean, we have two big guys, like me, you, John, sitting next to each other.
Yeah, we do.
And then we put Donald on the end. You got to sit the little man in the middle. And so we have as much room as possible, you know?
I know exactly what you mean.
And so, but the guy had his leg spread. Then he decided to cross his leg, and his foot was on my leg, like literally. So I had to put my tray table down, and then he still kept his foot there. Like, I'm trying to give him hints without, giving him a little elbow.
Yeah.
It was just weird.
You ain't wake him up or anything? Hey, dude.
And then he was rolling. It was just weird. And then his wife said, well, you know, if you want more room, we can switch about halfway through the flight. So I'm like, why don't y'all do that now before we take off? I mean, it was just a weird experience, and I had to tweet it, and it was just fun. So
that's why people buy first-class seats or business class.
Well, I mean, they have to be available, first of all. And then, I mean, I had already bought mine as a package, so through a travel agent. So we had got our ticket, and it just is what it is.
You were awfully, you're very quiet about this today. The other day you were.
I mean, it was funny to me because I was, I've been in that situation. I've been in the middle.
Yeah.
I've been in a row with all big people.
Well, then you can't help it. If applicable, you want the best seating arrangement as possible so everybody is comfortable.
Yeah.
That's all I was saying. I mean, I'm fine if it was three big guys. Okay, well, I'm just stuck here.
You're just stuck.
I should have upgraded if I wanted something different.
Now, you were in the exit row, right?
We were in the exit row.
We were in the exit. You had a little more room, but
I had more leg room to extend my feet. But he had more leg room to cross his legs,
right,
and infringe
like,
even
come
more
on, man,
so.
What you doing?
and his foot was on my leg. Like I know I felt that. I should have.
Were you trying to like move your leg? Like, hey, I can't move.
I was
no more,
too nice.
Man.
Next time I'm gonna actually probably touch his leg and massage his leg and see if that makes.
Yeah,
him
right. He was like, hey, dude. I was a little secret. I jump in my sleep. When I first fall asleep, I jump a lot. Oh. Right, I twitch. So it comes from stuff when I was young, and I'm on the flight and I'm asleep and I'm having a dream that I'm back on the field and I'm in a game, right? And so Fitz, I'm running a route and Fitz throws me the ball and I jump to catch the ball, and I literally jump and I backsmack the dude next to me. It was the funniest thing. And I looked at him like, my fault, dude. He was like, you all right? I'm like,
right.
I'm good. I'm good. Right. I had some rough experiences.
At least you acknowledge it, though.
Yeah.
I mean, you knew you was in the wrong.
I was. I said, I'm sorry.
This guy had no clue that he was being disrespectful. No clue at all.
What, did you have a connecting flight? Did you get on? Or was it straight from here?
No, we connected. We connected in Charlotte.
In Charlotte. So it was a good 2 hour that you had to deal with. Hour,
yeah, hour
20
and a half.
Minutes,
that
hour
was a short. No, actually, you know what? That was the long flight. That was my second flight. So I had to deal with it for 3 hours.
Man. Yeah, that's tough.
You made it, though. And you
I
got,
made it, yeah.
And what did you do when you got to Jamaica? What kind of, did you hang on the beach? Was
yeah,
it beach
weather?
Beach.
We went on like an evening cruise. We went over to Mystic Mountain where we did the bobsledding. Mm-hmm. And they had like a little museum up there kind of honoring Jamaican athletes and some of their culture. That was cool. Zip lining. It was a good time. I wanted to go to Dunn's Rivers, but we kind of ran out of time. We actually took wedding pictures on the beach, too, to kind of commemorate 10 years.
Is that where you went on your honeymoon 10 years ago?
No.
Oh, okay.
Where,
so it wasn't like a revisit?
No, it wasn't. Yeah. We went to Mexico.
Okay.
How big is the track star over there? I can't. Usain Bolt? Yeah.
He wasn't everywhere. I mean, he has, like, in the airport, he has, like, his own clothing line store.
Oh, okay.
Obviously, at the museum, they had a whole write-up on him.
Yeah.
But it's not like everywhere you look, you see him.
Yeah.
He did pass his high school or a school he went to growing up. But, yeah, I mean, you can see him. He's visible, but it's not, like, overwhelming.
Gotcha.
Lorenzo Alexander in studio with us. We got a lot to talk about. Before we move on to football, though, Donald, as you know, Lorenzo, and believe me, I'm not trying to set this up.
What is going on?
When we talk about you when you're not here.
Oh.
A little bit. And Donald had a critique of your particular style on Twitter and on social media.
My style?
Didn't you have a...
Like the Bitmojis and stuff?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. What's wrong with my Bitmojis?
Well, first of all, there's somebody in the other room who you might speak to on a regular basis.
Happy Thanksgiving.
I don't even know how Bitmojis work. Do you create
your own? It's an app that you have. You can create your own.
You
go in there and put like...
Makes it look like you?
Make it look like you. You know, I mean, it's very easy. And then you can... tweet them out to people.
You ever text anybody and just say K?
K?
Yeah.
No,
like, instead
me.
Of OK,
no.
You just say K?
No.
Yeah, don't do that either.
I mean, but what's wrong with the Bitmojis? See, that's
you know, I don't really
idea.
Have
I
an
mean,
issue
just...
with the Bitmojis. Somebody in the other room has an issue
with
that.
Well,
so you'll have
problem.
To bring that up.
They
and
need
they,
to talk to
they
me
can't
about
really,
it.
They can't
see,
defend they... themselves on air right
oh,
now.
Oh, that's
like,
fine.
You know, so.
Is it Jay?
He might. I can't say any names.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well,
but it's somebody
issue,
that you talk to.
Look, I mean, they should tell me.
Murph goes, it's Jay.
I don't understand why they won't tell me.
I don't know either.
I don't know either.
You know, some
know
people
either.
Like intimidated. You know, they talk trash on social media through other people. But
in
when
the
you're
office,
around.
When it's just us three in the office.
But when you're around, they don't say nothing. They don't I don't understand anything. It, you know.
I don't understand. I don't even know what a Bitmoji is, to be honest with you. Nor do I care to find out. All right, so have we settled all the business?
We,
are you
we
two
good.
Good?
We good.
Okay. I
we
just want to make sure.
Yeah,
something else is going to come up, I'm sure, while we talk for the next hour. But It's all good.
Okay. Now that you're here for on a semi-regular basis, we want to clear
the
regular
air. Thursday this appearance.
Yes. Lorenzo is in studio with us. You're welcome to join us. Phone lines open, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. All right, Lorenzo, here we are. We got stuff going on. Not here, though. We got Senior Bowl down in Mobile. We got the Pro Bowl in Orlando. We're going to talk to you about that. We also have comments from the general manager, Brandon Bean, about where they are on the Football Canada, in particular where they are when it comes to free agents. The free agency starts really in a couple of weeks, really. March 14th is the official start of the league year, and it actually is, what, 6 weeks, 4 or 5 weeks before the draft. So Brandon Bean was asked about the free agency. He's got his own list of Buffalo Bills free agents, and Bean was asked about the process, how he gets going on it. Here's what the general manager said about that.
When we get back from Senior Bowl, we'll start our free agency meetings. Our pro guys are back working on that. And we'll basically have our guys, and then we'll see what else is out there at positions. And then you got to evaluate. And it's just like you're pricing houses. You're looking at comps. This guy is similar to this guy. This is what he got paid. So to keep him, we have to expect to pay in this range. Is there a better guy, fit? But you got to make sure if you get somebody from the outside that he's a culture fit, too. And so those will all come into play with each free agent we have, plus anyone we bring in.
So by our count, there are 18 unrestricted free agents. You were an unrestricted free agent a year ago.
Yes, I was.
Yeah, and when did you sign?
That process.
It was before things opened
up,
right?
Yeah, it was during the legal tampering period.
Yeah, a couple of days before free agency.
Right.
Yeah.
So
that could be some signings. 18 free agents we count for the Buffalo Bills, unrestricted free agents. And we want to get to the list and let you see some of the names, familiar names, notable free agents coming up in mid-March. Kyle Williams, Jordan Matthews, a wide receiver, Sharice Wright at cornerback, Brandon Tate, wide receiver, Mike Tolbert, the fullback, Ramon Humber, outside linebacker, Travaris Cadet, running back, Deontay Thompson, wide receiver, Preston Brown, inside linebacker, E.J. Gaines at cornerback, Chantrell Henderson at tackle. So it's a lot of players.
Yeah, and some of those guys are obviously instrumental in our success on the field. It'd be interesting to see. I know several of those guys were on vet minimum deals, and those guys can't sign back until free agency starts unless it's another minimum deal. So some of those guys may not want to play on that deal and have to wait. So I know Ramon is one of those guys. I'm not quite sure everybody else's situation. But obviously you definitely want to have a guy like Kyle Williams back with the leadership that he brings to this team. E.J. Gaines definitely showed that he is a solid corner, can make a lot of plays. We just need to get him healthy and stay in, and sometimes you just have a year like that is out of whack. But as far as a guy in the locker room and what he's able to do when he's on the field, is amazing. I really like it. I really like E.J. Gaines. And then some other guys I mentioned, Travaris Cadet, Deontay Thompson, great role players. Guys that if you can get them back, you definitely want them back in the locker room because they bring value and depth to this team.
Hard to keep them all.
It is.
Especially when other teams are going to be competing for the same free agents as well. I guess this is where we want to start our conversation today with the listeners and viewers. If you had to prioritize, where would you start? Who's the most important Buffalo Bill unrestricted free agent coming up in a month and a half that you would want to have back on this roster? That's our Twitter poll. You can talk about it on the telephone line as well as at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Who is the most important Buffalo Bills free agent to the Bills need to re-sign? And on Twitter, we're underway with our Twitter poll right now. 65% of you say the cornerback, E.J. Gaines. 16% say the vet, Kyle Williams. 16% say the leading tackler, Preston Brown. 3% have somebody else in mind. Give us a call. Let us know what you think. 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550, or on Twitter at John Murphy Show. Vote on Twitter poll or weigh in on Twitter. Donald, what do you think?
I mean, you can't really substitute the leadership in the locker room. That is a huge thing. When you talk about Kyle Williams and what he brings to this team, when he's actually still a good player on the field.
right.
So it's not even just the leadership. He is still playing at a high level. He is still important to this defense. He is still important to any young guys around him actually just learning from him and everything that he has to do. I can see why people are going E.J. Gaines and how important the back end of the defense was this year. You talk about the team was 8-3 when he was in the lineup, so that's huge. He made a lot of big plays out there, but I don't think you can substitute a Kyle Williams and that leadership, what he's able to do on the field and in the locker room.
Right, it's all about perspective. Obviously, E.J. Gaines is a younger guy, a guy that, you know, you sign him, he's going to be here another 3, 4, 5 years potentially based on the way he plays and staying healthy and all that. And it's hard to find corners, find guys that can cover and is willing to come up and tackle.
Right.
And he's willing to do both of those things and is capable of doing both of those things. But obviously, Kyle Williams playing defensive tackle. Right now, I mean, Kyle is not. Cedric is a free agent as well. I think it's just Adolphus Washington. So that position is thin.
Right.
And then the guys that you even bring in, let's say you want to draft one, you know, early.
You need somebody to teach them
how to be a professional, how to watch film. How to become the next Kyle Williams, and there's no better person to do that than Kyle Williams, and then he just transcends this whole team as well as far as people that he affects in other rooms, this organization, and then like you said, he's still playing at a high level,
and
you know, obviously he was a Pro Bowl nomination this year as well, and is continuing to do things at a high level.
Let's hear from you. Who do you think is the most important free agent signing of the Bills' upcoming free agents? Who would be at the top of your list to get back on the roster? How about this, fellas? Of the three that we have listed on the Twitter poll, only one of them they acquired in a trade that this group went out and got, E.J. Gaines. The rest they inherited, right? Preston Brown and Kyle Williams.
Right.
I'm thinking about the question of fit. Clearly, E.J. Gaines, and he's got to stay healthy, but clearly E.J. Gaines fits what they want to do on defense, in the defensive backfield. Kyle Williams will fit anywhere, right? I mean, we know that.
Yeah, right.
He's done that forever. Preston maybe is a fit question. They inherited him. He had a very productive year. But I wonder if that goes into their thinking a little bit. Like, this is a guy we traded for. This is a guy, you know, we want.
Yeah.
The other guys we inherited, good players, nice players, good years. But maybe they place a higher priority on the guy that they went out and got.
I think in this league, a fit is important to all coaches.
Yeah.
That's why they draft certain players to fit their schemes. It's not like – I mean, you hear some guys say we're going to draft the best person on the board, but realistically, these coaches and these GMs are drafting guys that fit the scheme that they want to run. So when you talk about a Preston Brown, a lot of production this year. Was he first in the league in tackles?
Yeah, led the league.
So a lot of production, but then you have to ask yourself – do they want – Preston might not be the fastest linebacker, and you think about the linebackers that they had down – and Lorenzo, you can talk to this more.
Right.
The linebackers that they had down in Carolina, maybe they do want a fast, fast middle linebacker. I don't know. That's something that we have yet to see, but Preston is going to, I would think, command some money on the open market, so we'll see how that works
out.
Yeah,
I mean, for me, it's a production league, and Preston has shown that he can produce – in any system that you put him in and continues to get better. He's still young. I mean, Preston is only 25, first year in the system, and he's going to continue to get better. I don't like when people talk about, speed when they say 40
running
shorts. Preston plays the game fast, sideline to sideline when you watch him, running through the middle when we play cover two. Can he get better? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
This was his first year in the system, and he's still growing as a player, figuring out what the coaches wanted.
Right.
And, obviously under the tutelage of our linebacker coach and Sean McDermott, he can continue to grow as a linebacker and become even better and more of a leader and make even more plays, especially in the passing game. I think that's where we want to even get better as far as a linebacker goes, because we all know he can run and hit and make tackles in the run game.
Coach McDermott better than both of us know him.
Yeah.
We've all had a chance to work with him a little bit, but you get to talk to him on a regular basis. Last year, Zach was high up in the league in tackles. Zach Brown, who ended up with the Redskins, and he was a dude who was fast sideline to sideline. They didn't bring him back. So you would have to think that fit is important.
It is, but Zach and Preston are two different players when it just comes to culture.
Okay.
When you're talking about the fit in the locker room, how they respond to coaching. Critiquing themselves. Two different guys, and I definitely think Preston is a great fit for here. Zach wasn't, obviously meeting with the coaches and, watching the film, they parted ways.
Right.
But Preston fits that. He's a different category I would put him in.
Preston impresses me, and he's a teammate of yours, Lorenzo, but he impresses me as a smart player and a guy who's obviously the ability to adapt to different defenses. He's had a lot of different coordinators in his 4 years.
Yeah, he's very smart, very intelligent, like you said. I mean, he knows stats of guys, know where they went to school, fumbles. I mean, he understands what guys' strengths and weaknesses.
I think he does that so he can trash talk.
That too.
Didn't he tell us that?
Yeah.
But it only makes him better because he knows where their weaknesses and what they like to do as players, understanding schemes and offensive coordinators, what quarterbacks like to do. All that adds into playing the game faster and at a higher level. And he just wants to continue to add to himself. And he's a guy that is going to garnish a lot of, I think, attention from around the league because of what he's been able to do consistently under different coordinators. Yeah. I mean, it's hard to be productive when you're playing this 4-3 1 year and then going to 3-4 that's totally different and then going back to another 4-3 that's completely different than the initial 4-3 that you were playing in. I think people don't give you enough credit to that versatility and that ability to change and do what the coaches are asking you, because each time he's had a different position coach as well. And each coach is asking you to play the position at in a different way.
Yeah.
Different fundamentals, different reads, and it's not all just cookie cutter one thing. So Preston has definitely shown that over time he can do anything a coach asks him to do.
Now, we talk about the adaptability. You talk about him being able to go back and forth between those defenses, learn them quickly. We talk about speed,
right,
him being fast sideline to sideline. I think people underestimate really how important it is to be a smart player and to understand what an offense is trying to do to you.
Yeah.
Like we were talking about when you guys were about to play Carolina, how smart Luke Kuechly is down there.
Right.
And how he's able to call out what the offense is going to do. I think people underestimate that.
Yeah, I mean, they do. I think for Preston, sometimes that may even be work against him, because Sean comes from a Luke Kuechly, and Preston's not quite there yet, but he's growing to be that. But you just don't find Lukes everywhere. Preston is a good linebacker and is growing. And based on what I've seen, because I'm in the room with him every day, how smart he is, the checks he's making, you know, getting everybody lined up right, he's definitely on that trajectory to get there. And some people just aren't patient. Sometimes you just have to give them a couple of years in the system, because the first year you kind of learn, okay, what do I need to do? Mm-hmm. But then you're asked to know what you want to do and the linebackers and the DBs, because you got to do all this communicating. So he'll get there, just got to be patient and continue to grow. And like we said, he's young, and he's going to continue to get better, and he's gotten better immensely since I even been here. Yeah. So I'm looking forward to seeing hopefully he's back here, first of all, and just his continued growth and being productive as he's been the last, you know, two, three years.
He's going to be marketable, though, if it's not here, right?
That's all you need, right?
When you look at him and him being able to transfer from defenses like that alone will be marketable to another coach.
And the biggest thing, he's available. I don't think Preston's missed a game. Yeah. I mean, he plays all the snaps.
Yep,
I mean,
you're right.
If you're able to do that, I mean, at a high level, I mean, it's hard to find guys that can stay healthy. I mean, and Luke hasn't been able to do that. You know,
he's never missed a game in 4 years.
You know, so that alone is valuable, because you know you're going to have your guy that you paid, that you brought in, your leader, is going to be out there every single down leading your defense.
4 years, never missed a game, and started all but two games right at the start of his career.
Right, that's durability.
Yeah. We're talking about the Bills free agents. They've got a long list of their own free agents, and who do you prioritize as number one on that list? Who's the one guy they really need to bring back? Give us a call. The lines are open. 803-0550 is the number. Outside Buffalo, toll free at 1-888-550-2550. Or you can vote in our Twitter poll. Lorenzo Alexander is with us until 1 o'clock, so you can chime in with Lorenzo. Coming up a little bit later on in the show, we got a good show coming up for you today. Coming up at 1 o'clock, Chris Brown, just back from the Senior Bowl. Brownie will join us to talk about his observations at the Senior Bowl in Mobile. Coming up at 2 o'clock, Rick Goslin from the Dallas Morning News and the Talk of Fame Network will talk to us about the Pro Football Hall of Fame and about the special teams rankings. We should talk to you about that too, Lorenzo. Did you see, you know, Rick Goslin's special teams rankings?
Yeah, I don't look at all that stuff.
Okay. Well,
I watch film.
Because he's got the Bills. The Bills, well, let me tell you, maybe you'll feel a little bit better about it when I tell you this. Rick Goslin, Dallas Morning News, he does this every year, the special teams rankings. It's a composite of all the different special teams categories. You know, it's hard to quantify how teams are doing on special teams.
It is.
He does a composite where you rank in various categories. Let me read it to you. The formula, the league's 32 teams are ranked in 22 kicking game categories and assigned points according to their standing. If you're the best, say, at field goal percentage or the best at kickoff coverage, you get one. If you're the worst, you get 32. The Bills, the Rams finished first this year, but the Bills, best single season improvement. The Bills went from 24th in overall composite special teams rankings to 7th this year, up 17 spots.
Okay.
That's significant. Now you like this ranking, don't you?
No, I mean, it's just another ranking out there.
Yeah. But it showed improvement, a lot of it. And we'll talk with Goslin about it when he comes out with it. He credits, you know, the great kicking, really, of Hauschka is one of the
reasons. Yeah, I mean, obviously that's going to jack it way up, you know, compared to last year or this year. I mean, I don't know how many Hauschka missed, but it didn't feel like that many, maybe one or two.
I remember the one in the Jets game. I can't remember another one.
Yeah, you're right. But you got to feel good about that. But you're a big part of the Bills special teams, and you're 7th overall in the league.
Yeah.
Rams number one. You're not impressed.
I mean, it's a ranking. I mean, I'm not big on rankings. You know, I'm about productivity, because those things can, even rankings, when you go into stats, depending on how the game is played or how it unfolds, can be misleading. Mm-hmm. A lot of times there's a lot of hidden yardage there. So, I mean, I understand we need that stuff because you want to say who's better, who's not. But for me as a player, I like to see how it impacts the game as far as you winning. And sometimes that doesn't show up on a stat sheet.
Right. So we can talk to Lorenzo about that. We can talk about free agents. We got other things to discuss, and you're welcome to join us. 803-0550 and toll free 1-888-550-2555.
Now that we're talking about rankings, we talk a lot and we debate a lot with – we have some callers that come up sometimes, and they're like, they need to do more with analytics. Are you – I mean, I know they give you guys a scouting report and all that stuff
right.
with a bunch of different numbers,
yeah.
but how much do you pay attention to analytics as a player?
I mean, not that much. I mean, obviously, every team has tendencies. I mean, but I have never really gotten the analytics side of, you know, this player likes to cut left more than right. You know, you may say this guy is more of a downhill or he can end up anywhere type of guy, but I'm not really breaking it down to that specific,
right.
you know, type of thing that I know analytics can kind of get into.
Mm-hmm. Let's take a call for Lorenzo. Joe in Amherst. Hello, Joe. Welcome. You're on the air.
Hey, guys. Lorenzo, if the Bills don't re-sign somebody like a Preston Brown or a Hummer in the linebacking core, do you think they're going to address that in free agency, or is that something they're going to address in the draft? And then the second question is, being a little guy, I don't want to be stuck in between two big dudes on an airplane. Got to have that guy on the aisle.
On the aisle, but you're going to put me next to a big guy? So you want to be comfortable is what it is.
Yeah.
That's what he said.
Hey, man. Yeah.
Guy, you're going to be uncomfortable anyways.
No, I'm not. I wouldn't be uncomfortable next to you. If you're a little guy, I don't know how big you are, but if you're – I sat next to a little guy coming back from Jamaica, and I was good.
You're good?
I was real good.
Was he okay, though?
I fight, yeah, right?
He was, because I leaned to my side. He stayed right there, and I think he was with – I don't know if it was his wife or significant other, and he mm-hmm. leaned towards her, and we were all good, happy. Even had a conversation with him.
I'll fight over you got the leg space that we fight
the
over,
arm
but
rest.
Then the armrest.
Right.
That is the one thing that
you like.
But
if you have somebody on your side, you just lean that way.
Yeah,
and I'm
going to
lean
yeah.
my way, and we kind of share. I don't mind my arm being behind.
Mm-hmm.
You on my arm. I understand there's going to be some touching, but just, you know, reckless abandonment of that line is where I have an issue with. That was the only thing, you know.
Is it important to establish that line early in the flight?
Like, you have to. Yeah. Well, with him, I should have established it even more aggressively. Most people kind of figure it out
right.
over time, but he didn't care.
During the flight, it can shift, right?
Yeah, but he didn't care. He didn't.
Oh,
he was just all over. He didn't care. But to answer the caller's question, you know – you may depending on who's available, there may not be a clear upgrade. I don't know who the free linebackers this year are.
Mm-hmm.
That person that they pursue also has to want to come here. Obviously, the draft is always easier because then you can pick a guy that you really can groom
mm-hmm.
In the way you want to. Being a younger guy, and he has no choice. Once you pick him, he's coming here. So it's going to be based on who's available and the best fit for this team. And I don't know enough information of everybody to kind of make the best decision about that.
All right, we're going to take a break. We got more to talk about with Lorenzo. We're going to revisit his Pro Bowl experience from a year ago. We're going to revisit your Senior Bowl appearance. How many years ago was that?
14 years. Now, probably.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll talk about that with Lorenzo and much more. You're welcome to join us. Lines open 803-0550 or outside Buffalo toll-free at 1-888-552-550. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. We're talking about a lot of things with Lorenzo Alexander. He's here with us till 1 o'clock today. John Murphy and Donald Jones in our One Buffalo studio, including free agency. And our Twitter poll today put a priority list together of the Bills' own free agents. Who do you have at the top of the list? Is it Kyle Williams? Is it Preston Brown? Is it E.J. Gaines? Is it somebody else? A couple of tweets on this. Nick Blake tweets in, got to be Kyle Williams. Get him back one more year. Draft his replacement and let the young man learn behind one of the best. Plus, the leadership he brings is priceless. Yeah, nobody would dispute that. Jonathan Lemur tweets into the show, Lorenzo Alexander and Reuben Brown, two of the coolest Bills of all time.
Wow, yeah. Put in the same breath as Ruben.
Ruben is super cool.
I've only been here 2 years, so yeah. He is cool.
Ruben is cool. Yeah. Sometimes too cool for the show.
Yeah, Ruben is he's a different dude, man. Like hilarious.
Him. Yeah.
You can ring us up, let us know if you have any thoughts on this free agency thing or anything else for Lorenzo Alexander, who came here as a free agent and then re-signed last year. Last year, Lorenzo, this week last year, you were in the sunshine down in Orlando for the Pro Bowl. You miss it? You wish you were there? Was it that?
No, my wife does, though. Yeah. She's looking at everybody's tweets and texts. I'm like, I don't need to be there. I want me a car. I can't top last year. MVP, car.
There's nowhere to go but down.
Right, yeah, I know. I mean, she wants to go down there and kind of hang out. She loves taking the kids to Disney. Mm-hmm. That stuff is a headache for me. But it's a good time, I guess. But, we've done it already. But it's a great time to go down there, hang out. You know, obviously, you got guys from all around the league. Get to kick it with their families at the hotel. That's the best part about it. You know, you get to talk to them, get to meet them, their families, and just see how they are as people. Because oftentimes, as players, you just associate them. Okay, this dude likes to pass it, or he's a great pass rusher. You don't really get to know the person.
Do you do they give you guys, like, free passes to the parks and all that stuff?
So you get I'm assuming they're doing the same thing. So you get a 10-ticket tour of Disney, which is really cool, private tour. We had so many people, we had to get another one last year, but that was fine. And then they shut down part of Universal Studios for the night, and it was just Pro Bowl players and their family and guests in there, which was awesome. So those are the two big things that they do, and there's some other things in there as well. But it was really cool to set up and everything the way it was for us. We had a lot of fun.
How do you approach that game? The game this year is, Sunday night? Sunday afternoon, 3 p.m. You're down there. Clearly the practices are not grueling. You're in the sunshine. You're there to walk throughs. You're hanging with friends, meeting new friends. Then you got to go out and play a game on Sunday?
Well, you saw how I played. I'm a certain guy. I mean, you just play a certain way. It's hard for me to tone it back. Obviously, we had the Jimmy Graham incident last year. see this right here, my man shaking. I hit him. You know, it just happens. And actually, Roosevelt Nix, actually a fullback from the Steelers who got in. I guess the fullback from the Patriots. I was playing the Super Bowl, and he got a nod. And somebody was saying, I was like, dude, just go out there and ball out, man. Get your car out of it, and you know, you all happy. You don't have to talk to none of them dudes no more if you're playing too hard. Ain't nobody going to say nothing to you.
Why did you approach it like that? I mean,
that's just how I am. I mean, I'm wired a certain way, especially when you get in the game and in the moment. I kind of forget that it doesn't mean anything. You like a kid playing, you know, at the park. Man, you out there trying to win. I mean, that's just this is how I'm wired. It's hard for me to kind of just jog or not go hard. Right. It's just not in my DNA at all.
What kind of car did they give you?
A Hyundai Genesis. It's pretty dope. I mean, it's probably their luxury line. Yeah.
Big.
So it's equivalent to like a S500 Benz. Oh. I mean, it's in that caliber of vehicle, luxury vehicle. So it's awesome. It's a chauffeur's car.
Yeah.
You know, I had my brother actually out this summer, and he chauffeured me and my wife around a little bit. So it's fun.
So your brother flew out.
Well, not just to do that. He was spending time working out.
Just to work to
No, to work
drive
out,
you?
Work out, train with me. And, you know, one of the things he had to do was chauffeur me and her around.
Did you get in the back
hey,
seat?
Hey, man.
Yeah, we got in the back seat. I got in the back seat.
You
can
fly out here. You can work out and all of that, but you're going
right.
to drive.
Right. But he was 18 at the time. He loved it. I mean, who 18-year-olds gets to drive a car like that? You know, it's a $100,000 car. So he had a good time doing it.
So you don't miss it. Your wife does, Pro Bowl.
Yeah, she likes that type of stuff. I mean, I just like to be in my routine, hanging with the kids at home. I you know, you can travel too much. I'm not so we just came from Jamaica, and then I had to go down there and then go on the Super Bowl. It's just a whole bunch of trips back to back to back, and it kind of gets me out of my routine.
Lorenzo, I got to ask you about your brother. You raised some issues about your brother, your younger brother, Austin, who's a high-quality a prospect getting letters and interest from some big schools, but you had some comments about the NCAA and how they handle this recruiting process.
Yeah, well, not how they handle it. I mean, it's just a rule that they have that you have to be either a parent or a guardian for them to actually fly you out there to partake in that experience with him as far as
the official visit,
you know, asking questions about how's it going to be used, what academic issues do you have? Oh, okay. Are you done?
That's what happens, man. It just comes
up. It's kind of unprofessional, man.
So that happened with Ruben on air a few times.
Oh, well, Ruben is – this is part-time.
I know.
You're full-time. So now you're going to lower the standard?
No, I'm just saying.
No, man. Donald, we got to get this guy. Man, he's not – Is he a culture fit? I don't know, man.
I'm great for this room. What you mean? I'm great for this room. I bring a little balance to the room.
Oh, okay.
You know?
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, it was just an issue. I mean, because every kid, obviously, I can afford to fly myself out there. But when I was coming out, my uncle was the guy that I would have brought with me. And now, today, he wouldn't be able to come with me, but he would have been the biggest consultant I would have wanted to have just to understand, okay, let's ask the right questions. Are you sure you like this? Yeah. You know, and be able to compare the schools with me, because it's hard for an 18-year-old kid to figure out where they want to go, ask the right questions while they're down there, because they're getting catered to, so they're not even asking any questions.
Yo.
You know, so, that's the only issue I had. And, I just thought it may be cool if they had, like, a waiver or something where a kid could maybe fill it out and say, I want to bring my uncle instead, and this is the reason why, and then they get it okayed. So, you know, it is what it is.
They changed the rules a little bit, but I remember, like, when I was coming out, when you were still in high school, you would go to a certain school, and they would, like, have your jersey up in the locker. In your locker, they would bring up on the Jumbotron, have your name up there.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, man, and as an 18-year-old kid, you like, yo.
Right.
That's what's up right there.
You
or you going.
They don't do that anymore?
I don't
think
they
can. Like, Oregon used to fly there on their private jet, the Oregon Duck jet, and then they have, like, a Hummer waiting for you when you got off. I mean, they can't do that anymore because, you know, they got that Nike money up there.
Yeah.
But it used to be off the chain.
they scale back on all of that stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you're a young kid, you need somebody that's been through this process to come with you, because you're just going to be like, man, I love the stadium. I'm going there.
Yeah.
And you're like, what you going to study?
Right.
I don't know. I just like the stadium.
Yeah.
Or
like
the coach made me.
Right.
That's another thing you hear all the time. They made me feel at home.
Right.
None of that matters. Because it's going to be totally different when you get there.
So you've resolved with the NCAA, or you're kind of working through it, the issues?
Working through it.
Okay.
Working through it.
You were talking about this process with your brother. Obviously, you've been through the recruiting process. What's the worst process? Recruiting, free agency, draft?
Ooh, what's the worst? I don't – I mean, that's hard. That's hard right there.
Yeah.
I mean, drafting and recruiting is probably about the same. I don't know. I mean, that's hard. I mean, they all got their pros and cons.
Free agency is, you know, that's one thing where when you're negotiating, they say things to you, and you're like, man, like they try to make you feel like you less of a player than you know you are.
Right. Well,
like,
that's the same thing with the draft, too. So I would put that, yeah. I mean, I went undrafted, so, So that was the worst for me, because somebody actually called me and said, we're going to draft you, and didn't draft
me. I got that three times.
Yeah, so that's probably the worst. I mean, free agency and getting recruited, you kind of control that process.
Right.
You know, I can pick and choose. You have really a lot of the leverage depending on what caliber of player you are. That draft, you kind of just sitting there waiting.
Yeah.
There's nothing you can do. You can't control anything. You have no input.
Right.
And that's about it.
This is also Senior Bowl week, and our man Chris Brown is going to join us coming up next hour to talk about some of the prospects down there. But you went there, undrafted as you were. Mm-hmm. You were down there in Mobile, right? 14 years ago. What was that experience like for you?
It was great for me. I mean, because then you get to measure yourself against other kids from around the country, you know, not just in your conference and the guys that you see all the time or the guys that may just be in your workout groups wherever you may be training. So I really enjoyed it. You know, you get to see some NFL coaches, get to speak to them, get coached by some of those guys. So it was great.
What was your position at the Senior Bowl?
I was a D tackle then.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So I had a great time.
What team?
I was on the North and South, right? The North team.
Yeah, you're on the North. Who's your coaches? That was a long time.
A long time ago. I know some of the players, like Logan Makins was part of that. Dan Orzlowski, Kyle Orton.
Mm.
I think Tampa Bay coached the South, and I think we had. Oh, man. I can't remember who we had.
We hear the Bills guys talking about the nighttime meetings with some of the prospects. Did you go through some of that at the
No, Senior I actually didn't. I never got interviewed at all through the process. So I just figured I was a great kid. Had my shoulders. Had a high football IQ. They already knew.
Lorenzo's walking through that. Nobody wants to interview me.
Yeah,
everybody's standing around getting interviewed.
Right. Nobody interviewed
me.
All right.
I just go to dinner.
Yeah.
Is that a red flag? I mean, you're talking about not being drafted. Maybe
I don't know. They never told me anything. You know, that's one of the things I wanted to know. And my boy, I was like, you don't want to know. Chris Draft told me, you don't want to know what they really thought about you. You feel bad.
And you went to the combine a month later,
Went to the combine.
Any interviews there?
No.
Oh, my God. No.
I went through the whole process and didn't get interviewed once. So,
What?
I had a great resume, you know.
Nobody had it over the years.
Yeah, you know.
What do you think?
My reputation preceded me.
That would have been depressing. I'm not going to lie.
It was.
Yeah, that.
Like,
that
man,
nobody wants to talk to me.
You had an agent. Did you ask your agent?
No. Like I said, I figured because I was a great person.
Sure.
Great football IQ. Everybody said the right things about me.
I was telling them the other day. So I'm at the combine. I had one former interview.
Okay.
And I'm at the combine. They bring me in the room, in the hotel room in Indianapolis. And Chan Gailey, the receivers coach was there. GM Buddy Nix was there.
Okay.
A bunch of the scouts all sitting in.
Right.
And so they say to me, they get me up on the board. So they're like, what's your favorite play? And my mind just went blank. Right. I couldn't think of any plays that we ran.
Right.
So I just drew anything up there, right? And they're like, the play that I drew up would never be a play.
Right.
And they're like, what is that? Is that how y'all ran plays? And I'm like, man, we did things differently.
Oh.
My
boy Cap is cool right there.
I'm like, we did things a little different, right. You know, our offensive coordinator is a little different. They're like, all right. You know? I ended up here, but yeah. You know, whatever.
Some of those people reach for a pen at that point.
Start writing.
All right. Absolutely.
I called my offensive coordinator from college, like, right. Did you run this play?
Yeah.
Hey, when we come back, we want to talk to Lorenzo about a chance for a new professional football league. We'll talk about that when we return. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy and Donald Jones. Lorenzo Alexander joining us in studio, and they're getting ready for the return of the XFL. Are you ready for that? Vince McMahon, the founder and chairman of WWE, going to announce in about an hour or so that he's going to bring back another professional football league, Alpha Entertainment, with a news conference this afternoon. McMahon filed paperwork a little while ago with the Securities and Exchange Commission, says he's going to sell about $100 million in stock to fund this company that will make investments, including professional football. McMahon, the guy behind the XFL in 2001, the league that he co-owned, lasted only one season, but a unique league. All of us had some exposure to it.
Yeah. Right?
I mean, it was like, I'm not saying it was must-see TV, but it was a little bit different.
It was different. I mean, the different angles you saw, you know, the access that you got. I was talking off-air earlier, talking about I played with He Hate Me, Rod Smart down in Carolina my rookie year. And that's all I could remember, you know, just him from the XFL. And, you know, it was crazy. Antics, WWE on the field.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. It was like that game, NFL Blitz.
Right, yeah, you know, that's exactly what it was.
Everything just
goes.
Yeah, everything goes. Sideline pop. We used to play that when I was young. The XFL was funny. It was crazy. I mean, I'd watch it. I'm not going to lie to you.
Yeah.
They bring it back up, I'm watching it.
Some of the innovations, including, like, cameras on the field, cameras overhead.
Right.
Now are kind of – we expect that in the NFL. Yeah. They brought some stuff to the game, right? Oof. I mean, they brought stuff that exists now even in the old, tired National Football League. It was new. It was fresh. People love that stuff.
Yeah, and they're probably going to have a lot of people – a lot of people liked it.
Yeah.
And so if they truly bring it back, a lot of people will watch it. Just to see if it's the same way as it was then.
Yeah.
And you're going to get a lot of dudes that just want to play football, and they're going to go out there and play.
Well, that was my
question. As crazy as it was.
Who is going to play in that, Lorenzo? Like old NFL guys?
I would say guys that don't get drafted. I mean, there's a lot of college guys that know they don't have a shot in the NFL that may go into that. Just another avenue for, you know, some free agents to continue to play, stay in shape until maybe they get a call from the NFL. It'll be interesting to see if the NFL allows it to grow because obviously that's a competitor, and you know when you have powerful people, they don't like their money being played with. So, you know, you'll just see how long it hangs on and how well it does.
He Hate Me ended up in Carolina because of how good
he was a dynamic returner in the XFL, and he got a shot. So you're always going to have a couple of guys like that will get a contract just to see how they translate to the NFL.
Man, there are so many, like, small leagues. I know a bunch of people that play semi-pro.
No.
And these dudes are, like, 40 years old playing semi-pro, hitting like crazy. And I'm like, you don't have insurance. You're not making any money, anything out here.
No trainers.
Nothing.
Treating
it's just
themselves.
Wild, wild west. Yeah.
You can add that life.
Joker tore his knee up. He's still out there playing.
Yeah, man.
What? You don't even have a ride to the hospital.
Yeah. Let that dream go away. Have some kids. Live through them. Something. But don't go out there and tear your body up for free.
For free.
Reggie, you're involved with the NFLPA. Why has the developmental league never took hold, do you think? And people talk about it. The commissioners talk about it. But nothing
right.
has ever really been established to develop young players.
Yeah, I don't know. We've never really talked about, you know, a farm system. Obviously, they had the NFL Europe for a long time. Mm-hmm. But obviously, that was hard on guys going over there, playing a whole season, and then going right into training camp.
Yeah.
You know, it's just always trying to, you know, fudge it and trying to see what works and what makes sense. Because it always comes down to money and making money. Are you willing to lose money in the league? I mean, that's always a big part of it.
Yeah.
And, you know, can you get fans to come out to it? Because it is such a hard game. It's not easy to do like basketball where you can do it, you know, play three or four games and have a tournament and then be done with it. You know, it's a lot that builds up to playing a football game.
You are headed to the Super Bowl in Minneapolis next week, huh?
Yeah, I'll be out there. I'm actually going to be partaking in an NFL broadcasting program. I went to the sports journalism program a couple of years ago down at Bowling Green. And so they sent out an invitation and had guys kind of sign up and apply for this opportunity. And I'll be down there. Actually, one of my former teammates in Buffalo Bill, LeJay Duzable, will be down there
sure.
as well, hanging out with us and just doing, you know, media role, co-hosting the show, kind of simulating what we're doing here on a national level, be bouncing around to different things. You know, doing NFL Network, Sirius XM. Yeah.
Big time.
Not like our little
mom and pop grocery store here.
No, I said simulating what they're doing here. You know, what we're doing in this room.
Yeah, yeah.
When, how was that, that broadcast?
I thought we good, man.
How was that?
Man, don't.
How was that broadcast boot camp out at Bowling Green?
I really enjoyed it. You got, you know, first our hands-on professional help from people that are in the business doing it.
Yeah.
You know, whether it was VPs or on-air talent, just giving you feedback. You know, we got to actually do like a live press conference. Got to do our own radio show or podcast, do some writing. That was really what it focused on as well, doing some writing, which, you know, obviously when you get out of college, you don't do that much writing unless you have to.
Mm-hmm.
So to be able to have to write, you know, maybe three or four different types of papers or segments was challenging and very helpful and definitely helped me with maybe, you know, adding to my skill set.
This guy to my right, he wasn't there teaching. We got to get him out there.
No, I know.
He's a pro, man.
NFL has never approached you about being one of, you know.
No.
No?
We
you know
Jay
a lot of people
Mellon.
Do.
Yeah.
Look, does it pay?
I don't know. I don't get paid to do
service.
This. You know, sometimes you just got to
do it for you.
So, yeah, sometimes you just got to do stuff that's, you know, helping other people out.
Yeah,
you know,
I would do it for you.
I'm helping you guys out. Get your ratings up. Coming on the show, you can come and help me. And you know,
speaking of that,
man, that opened a whole can of worms.
Will you be available? We've got our best man Steve Tasker out there with producer Jay Harris.
Yeah,
at the Super Bowl next week. You'll
yeah.
be around. Maybe?
Yeah, I'll be around. I know me and Jay have talked about some things. Obviously, I would love to work with Steve. That's one of my idols as far as in the football world.
Yeah.
So, and he does a great job. He's done a great job transitioning. So it'd be great to hang out with him as well.
Will you have handlers? A lot of people down there have a bunch of
handlers.
No,
I'm not big time.
Like,
I can walk through and hide. People don't really know. I don't have a famous face. You know, I'm not OBJ or somebody shady.
Yeah.
Not yet anyway. We're getting there though.
Yeah. Well, if I continue to do this show, I may have some issues.
All right. I might have some issues.
Well, have a great time there, Lorenzo. Thanks for coming in and we'll hear from you next week at the Super Bowl. Thank you.
I appreciate you guys.
Lorenzo Alexander in studio with us. This first hour coming up next, the Senior Bowl recap with Chris Brown, Bills Insider, BuffaloBills.com. That's next on the John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Buffalo Bills Radio Network. Sports update.
Update from One Bills Drive. Bills coaches and personnel execs remain in Mobile, Alabama for the Senior Bowl. Head coach Sean McDermott, along with his coordinators, Brian Daboll on offense, Leslie Frazier on defense. They're down there along with GM Brandon Bean and his personnel department. Watching the prospects on the field today, the final day of the Bonafide Senior Bowl practices. The game is Saturday in Mobile. Yesterday, day two, Penn State wide receiver Deshaun Hamilton, one of the surprises in the first couple of days. He's running routes well, according to NFL.com. Washington State quarterback Luke Falk and Richmond quarterback Kyle Aletta have done themselves well, too, at the Senior Bowl in Mobile. Super Bowl is coming up a week and a half away. Patriots tight end Rob Gronkowski has been listed with a concussion on the team's injury report ahead of the game against Philadelphia. The report said Gronkowski would not have practiced had the Patriots taken the field yesterday. It's the first time the Patriots have acknowledged that Gronkowski suffered a concussion, injured in the AFC Championship game last Sunday against Jacksonville. San Francisco 49ers general manager John Lynch says it just makes too much sense to sign Jimmy Garoppolo. The 49ers hold the option to sign him with a franchise tag, but Lynch said it's a long-term deal is what they have in mind to keep Garoppolo around in San Francisco. The Saints general manager Mickey Loomis says his quarterback's wishes, Drew Brees' wishes to stay with the franchise, is what New Orleans wants, too. We want him to be our quarterback, and we'll get going on that at some point, Mickey Loomis said. Le'Veon Bell and the Pittsburgh Steelers have made significant progress on a contract extension. That's what Bell said after practice at the Pro Bowl yesterday. Without divulging specifics, Bell said he is happy with what the team has presented. And the Buffalo Sabres look for their third win in a row tonight. They take on the Canucks in Vancouver. Jack Eichel on a roll heading into the All-Star weekend. He goes into tonight's game on a 7-game point streak. 14 points in those games, fourth longest active streak in the NFL. Eichel will go to Tampa this weekend for the NHL All-Star game, his first All-Star appearance of his career. Sabres tonight in Vancouver. And that is the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Donald Jones, and our One Buffalo studio. All week long, our man Chris Brown has been following the prospects down at the Senior Bowl in Mobile, Alabama. Chris is on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline with us right now. Chris, good afternoon. Thanks for joining us back from Mobile. A whirlwind week of workouts down there at the Senior Bowl, right? You survived okay, I trust.
Oh, yeah. No, we're fine. We're all good. But, no, it was good to kind of get a jump on, you know, some of the seniors in the draft class this year. And, you know, top to bottom, the talent is largely day two, day three type prospects, maybe with the exception of a couple of the quarterbacks. But, you know, I think there were some players that helped themselves.
I said this to Donald. One of the best things about the Senior Bowl, and obviously you got the two Super Bowl teams waiting in the wings, but everybody else is sort of uses the Mobile week to turn the page, right, to get to next season. You probably felt that around the Bills and every other team down there this past week.
Yeah, I mean, you're already getting your plans in order and you're trying to get a better feel for a lot of these players. I know this is really the first crack for teams to interview these guys to get a sense for who they are as people, you know, after watching them for the better part of the last 4 months on tape as players.
Chris, I mean, how many of the players did you get to talk to? Did you get a sense that they felt like you were a scout before you told them who you were?
I always make sure we clear that up real quick. I mean, even though I've got usually Bills gear on, you know, I kind of explain to them what my role is and just say, hey, we want to talk to you for a little bit, and they're fine with it. I'm sure their agents tell them, though, that, hey, even if you're interviewing with a team website, you know, you better be on your P's and Q's because – you don't know. The scouting staff may ask for it and look at it.
Yeah.
You know, anything's possible. So, I mean, we don't do that, or at least we've never had requests from the guys upstairs for that. But, you know, happy to provide it if they want it. It's right on the it's right on BuffaloBills.com, so there it is.
Hey, Chris, you know, speaking of the interviews, I got the sense from listening to Sean McDermott, who was at his first Senior Bowl as head coach of the Bills, Brandon Bean, who's obviously been there before but never as a general manager. Knowing what we know about them, the value they put on character and good fits with their team, culture fits, as they say, I would imagine, and they even said it, those interviews, I think, meant a lot to them to get that process started down in Mobile this week.
Yeah, and it always is for them. And, you know, I think coming in the door, Coach McDermott made that clear even last year. And you need look no further than the draft class that came in the door last spring. You know, whether it was guys who were team captains, guys who were four-year players with a long body of work, with proven production, and I was going up and down this roster looking for some of those same qualities. That's not the end-all, be-all, of course. You got to be able to play, too, but, you know, I can see them trying to narrow things down to guys that they don't want to have to worry about what they're going to get from that player in practice in week one, knowing it's going to be no different than what they get from them in week 17. I mean, I know you just had Lorenzo on, but he's said himself, the NFL season is a grind. You really got to love that game to be putting the time in when your body doesn't feel good in week 12 and you got to drag yourself out there on the field and give the same effort, put in the same level of preparation so you can perform on Sunday. And some players find that harder than others. And I think that's why the character makeup is so important to Coach McDermott and his staff.
Well, knowing that you looked at the roster yourself on that, and we do want to ask you about some prospects, but is there anybody on that character checkoff list that's kind of stood out to you or jumped out at you in your homework at the Senior Bowl or even watching or talking and listening to some of these players? And knowing what you do about the Bills' needs, too, what they might be looking for in the draft, anybody that you think makes a good impression in that regard, character, team fit, culture fit?
Yeah, I mean, I was kind of drawn to the backstory on Penn State wide receiver Deshaun Hamilton, who by the week had one of the best weeks among the wide receivers. Team captain, good production. His parents are Marines. He finished the season strong in the bowl game for Penn State and really had a consistent week this week. He's a guy that seems to check a lot of the boxes, you know, that the Bills tend to look for. You can run up and down the list on both sides, but he was the guy that probably stood out. That Arizona State kid that I mentioned, the running back, who all indications from scouts is that, you know, he looks like Tarzan but doesn't always play like Tarzan, but he was a team captain too, accepted a lesser role without blinking, kind of shows he's a true team player. So, you know, there's probably about a half dozen players on these two rosters who at least character-wise on the surface would appear to check a lot of boxes that the Bills look for.
Chris, knowing what we know about Coach McDermott, Brandon Bean, the emphasis that they have on high-character guys, do you find yourself, when you're looking at guys that you might have heard, okay, he's had some issues in college, that you kind of, in your mind, kind of check them off as a target for the Bills?
You mean take him off the list?
Yeah, it's just in your mind. All right, yeah, they probably draft him. Because,
I try not to do that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it definitely puts a thought in the back of your head, like, man, this guy may not be up to snuff for what the Bills typically look for. I think everybody deserves a second chance. And, mm-hmm. when you're young, sometimes you're stupid and you make poor decisions.
I like how you worded that.
So, it's just, that happens sometimes. And I think that's the other reason why they got to get guys in a room. Sometimes they need to explain, the bad mark on their resume and why it's there and what happened. And sometimes, there's a pretty good explanation. Sometimes there isn't. Yeah. But that's why you do your due diligence with these players, so you can effectively say, well, on the surface that was a concern, but after talking to him, it's clear it was, just a bad set of circumstances, and it was less on the kid and more on the situation, than anything else. And that's why they do these interviews, so they can iron those wrinkles out.
Chris Brown giving us his recap of the Senior Bowl as the practice week winds up down there in Mobile, Alabama. If you have questions, comments about some of the prospects that Chris may have had eyes on this week, give us a call. Phone lines open at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. You talked about Deshaun Hamilton, wide receiver, Penn State, 6'1", 205 pounds, I believe. The guys at NFL.com, in fact, Bucky Brooks, Daniel Jeremiah, mentioned, Chris, that Hamilton is probably the best route runner of the receivers there, and they raved about his timing, patience, ability to change gears. You probably saw, along with the character issue, you probably saw some of that on the field down there in Mobile this week, huh?
Yeah, just from start to finish, he was really good, just consistent. I just thought he was the most consistent receiver on the field through the course of the week. Now, there were some other guys that I felt were good route runners, too. Boise State's Cedric Wilson is a pretty sharp route runner. Colorado State's Michael Gallup, which is a great, great wide receiver name, by the way. But those two guys, I thought, performed admirably in the route running. You've got a handful of players there at the receiver position that I think are going to merit a lot of consideration on day two, maybe the early stages of day three, knowing a lot of the junior eligibles are going to be the first names off the board at the position. But I think there's some value there at the receiver position, and some teams are going to be pretty happy with some of the talent that's available, come day two or early day three. So I was encouraged by the receiver group. I thought they clearly outperformed the defensive backs here, who you know, left me wanting more, unfortunately.
Chris, any of those receivers, as Bills fans here want to hear about a true number one wide receiver? And we don't know if Coach McDermott and Brandon Bean feel like they already have that on the roster. Maybe they just want a deep threat. But any of those guys who you're talking about probably will end up on day two, day three, might, in your eyes, have the potential in the future to be a true number one wide receiver?
Boy, I don't know. That's a tough one to figure. You know, from a pure playmaking standpoint, the one guy that's wound really tight that I think could, you know, do some damage down the line, maybe in year three, is the kid from Missouri, Jamon Moore. Really soft hands. I mean, these quarterbacks, along with the ball location issues this week, and there were many of those, not too many of these guys took a lot off of their passes either, even when they were short routes. And you almost don't even hear the ball hit Jamon Moore's hands. But he was a guy that routinely got behind the defense as well. And I just think he was physically superior from a speed standpoint. And he's kind of that wiry strong. You know, he doesn't look broad-shouldered. He's not all jacked up. But he can use his body. You know, he's good at leaning in and then leaning off to create space so he can make the reception on DBs. So I think that's a guy that's got a high ceiling who may not go, you know, super early.
Chris Brown joins us to talk about the Senior Bowl. We have not asked you about quarterbacks yet, Chris, and we will. But there are a couple other guys that I want to get to. First, a week ago on our show, Phil Savage, the executive director of the Senior Bowl, talked to us about Marcus Davenport, defensive end from Texas San Antonio, who was there. He talked about him as being kind of a under-the-radar type of guy. He's not under the radar anymore based on some of the reports coming out of Mobile. Did you get a chance to form any impressions about Marcus Davenport, the edge guy, the edge rush guy from Texas San Antonio?
Yeah, I'm worried he got a little overhyped.
Really?
Coming into this because he just didn't flash enough for me, especially in the one-on-one. You know, I'm thinking this is mano a mano. You know, this guy's a really long kid. He's probably going to keep the offensive tackles from getting their hands on him. And, you know, he's going to make some people look silly. And it just didn't happen.
Yeah.
I thought, you know, good plays that he turned in were just way too few and far between.
Hmm.
In the team segments, I didn't notice them at all. So he better have a heck of a game on Saturday if he wants to maintain this status, because I think there's probably a good number of scouts that are wondering now if he's going to be able to make the jump, you know, from the conference he played in down there at Texas San Antonio to the big time. I mean, the physical tools are all there. I don't think that's up for debate, but, you know, you got to be able to match the competition, and when the competition is as physically gifted as you are, you got to win some of the time, and I just didn't see him win enough.
Daniel Jeremiah had him as the seventh name off the board in the draft, you know, top 10 pick. We'll see
yeah.
how that plays out.
Yeah, I saw all the hype coming in, but the hype didn't match what I saw on the field, unfortunately.
One more guy to ask you about. The guy who did get a lot of hype, and for good reason, it's a tremendous story, the Central Florida linebacker, Shaquem Griffin. He's got one hand. He plays one-handed. How does that work for him, and how did he show down there in Mobile?
Yeah, I mean, I liked what I saw from him. I thought he had a great answer when somebody asked, you know, how have you learned to play with a disability? And his answer was, it's not a disability unless you make it one. And I thought it was a great answer. But, yeah, he had to have his hand amputated at age four due to a congenital condition from, you know, when he was in the womb. So by age four, he had to have his hand amputated. And, you know, he has basically dealt with it. And he's effective. They've lined him up everywhere on the field this week, too. They had him at defensive end. They had him at outside linebacker. They even had him at safety. Because,
wow.
You know, weight-wise, you know, he's not a giant guy. He's 6'2", 229. So I thought he was effective this week. I mean, I remember a tackle's trying to lock him out outside on a goal line play, and the tackle's just saying to himself, well, I'm just going to ride him out wide, create the gap for the running back. And what he did was he kind of deftly pulled the offensive tackle through, sidestepped him, and stepped in the gap to force the running back to choose a different hole to run through. Yeah. You know, and there were other plays where he flashed also. It's not a hindrance for him. He's learned how to use his one hand, and then he uses, and I apologize for not having a better term for this, but the stub at the end of his forearm, he uses that just as balance. He will use it to attack the offensive lineman or whoever's coming at him, and then he'll use his hand to kind of either pull himself through or shed. But I was impressed with how he was able to shed blockers and get to the ball. And I think he's going to have a chance. There was a lot of news this week about how he didn't get a combine invite yet. I think he's earned it, guys. I think he's put together a solid week, and I think he's earned a combine invite. And he's got an older brother, too, that plays in the NFL for the Seahawks.
Right, yeah. Now, Chris, it's amazing to me as you talk about Griffin right there and him not getting the combine invite yet. It's amazing how you can have a guy with so much hype coming into this week, have a bad week, they end up going undrafted. And then you can have a guy really with no hype that can have a great week, and next thing you know, they end up a first or second rounder.
Yeah, and I don't know if he's going to be that high, but I could see him going somewhere, you know, maybe late on day two. If somebody likes him enough, it's going to be, I think for some teams, it's going to be very hard to look past, you know, what is perceived as a disability by most, not by Shakem, obviously, but, you know, I think it's going to be hard for some teams to get past that and say, yeah, let's invest a high pick in him, because I think people are unfairly going to say, well, the ceiling has to be limited. Can only do so much with one hand, but I think he's shown he can do a lot and pretty effectively.
Is that the pronunciation, Chris? Shakem? Is that how they're saying it?
I believe that's what I heard earlier in the week, yes.
Shakem. Okay, we'll keep an eye on him. Chris Brown on the line with us. He's talking about the Senior Bowl. He's been there all week in Mobile, Alabama. And now to the quarterbacks, which everybody likes to talk about.
Right.
Baker Mayfield, what did you think? Is he belong in that absolute top tier of, top four quarterbacks in this year's draft based on the quarterbacks you saw there in Mobile?
Well, he was the best of the group here, but I don't know if that's saying a whole lot. You know, I don't think he raised his stock this week, and I don't think he hurt his stock this week. I think he was probably what everybody expected. I don't think he lit it up, and I don't think, you know, he disappointed anybody. He certainly didn't help himself, you know, by getting in late. Obviously, there was a good reason for that with his mom in the hospital back in Austin. And, you know, he wanted to spend some time with her before he came down to Mobile. But it kind of put him behind the eight ball a little bit because he was behind in terms of the install that a lot of the quarterbacks ran through on Sunday and even early Monday and all day Monday. So he was playing catch-up, excuse me, for most of the week. And I think that set him back on the first day. But by the second day, you know, he was kind of getting the hang of things and making plays and performing more confidently. I would say the thing that struck me about how he performed, you know, the intangibles are off the charts. I find the maturity question, I don't know. I think it's missing the mark. I just think he really has a supreme passion for football. I don't think you doubt how much he loves the game, watching him perform. I mean, even when they're throwing routes on air, you know, after all the receivers run their routes down to the other end of the field, then the quarterbacks follow and they come back the other way. Well, he's first running down the field every single time. You know, and it's just those little things that coaches notice. While other, you know, you got a couple other quarterbacks kind of loafing their way down the field. It's like, you do know you're auditioning here, right? Like,
yeah.
What are you doing?
Yeah.
He gets it. And, you know, I think all of the attention after winning the Heisman is wearing on him a little bit. But he's got to understand that that's going to be every day if he's the starting quarterback in the NFL. And I think that is what NFL teams are really trying to get their hands on in terms of getting a grasp of, is he going to be able to deal with this every single day? Because you've seen him fire back on Twitter, you know, at fans that give him snark and whatnot. that's going to have to get toned down.
Right.
He's going to have to be more politically correct with his answers if he's going to be the face of a franchise.
Now, Chris, on the flip side of it, and really your comment about him stepping above everybody else, which doesn't say much, your comment right there says a lot. Josh Allen, who a lot of people have – I've seen different things on him from this week, but we've seen a lot of him being off the mark with his accuracy. What can you say about Josh Allen?
He was off the mark. you know, the 56% completion percentage for his career was a big issue from the very beginning of the week. In the press conference on Monday, he said he didn't want to talk about it anymore. Well, if you don't want to talk about it anymore, you got to go do something about it on the field. He didn't. You know, I was trying to be objective and give him a pass on Tuesday. You know, first day with new receivers, you're executing a system you haven't before, although he does come from a pro-style system up there at Wyoming. And, I mean, he's missing routes on air, guys.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no defense on the field. He can't hit somebody with the football. Mm. And I'm thinking, this guy is going to be at the top of the draft? I mean, he can't complete passes on air. It's just, I was astounded. I mean, we've seen players at the Senior Bowl at the quarterback position, and we know, like, this guy is just a fill-in guy, you know, to round out the roster. Somebody canceled at the last minute. This guy gets called in. You know, nice player, maybe a priority free agent, maybe a seventh rounder. Like, I interviewed Greg McElroy, who's now an ESPN college football analyst. He was one of the quarterbacks when Chan Gailey was the head coach and running one of the teams that week down there. McElroy had better ball placement and more consistent accuracy than Josh Allen, who's a top-ranked prospect.
Yeah.
I understand the physical tools are off the charts. And, you know, I saw some people tweeting this 20-yard out that he threw after avoiding the rush, and it was a great ball. It was probably his best pass of the week. The problem is he makes those kinds of plays once every 20 snaps.
Jeez.
That's not going to get it done in the NFL. So I don't know what he can do to fix that, but this was the week to show he was making improvements to at least give scouts the indication that, you know what, we can work with this kid, we can get him better. In my opinion, if you're going to draft him, you better be wholly confident in the teaching and development abilities of your offensive coordinator and your quarterbacks coach, because this guy needs a ton of reps. And it's hard for me not to go back to the Bill Parcells formula, which is 30 career starts in college, 60%, at least 60% completion percentage, and there's a couple of other things in there too. I think a 2-to-1 touchdown to interception ratio. I'm having a hard time coming around to liking Josh Allen enough to make him a first-round pick.
I don't think Chris likes Josh Allen.
No, I don't think so.
We're watching him. Yeah, we were watching some of the coverage yesterday in our office, and I think it's a play you referred to, Chris, right? A little bootleg to the outside.
It
it was a good throw. It was a tremendously athletic play, but you're telling me you didn't see enough of that, right? The bootleg to the right side when he threw it downfield, getting outside the pocket yesterday?
Yeah, and he had another one when he rolled to the left on Tuesday. And again, it was a difficult throw. Not many guys can make it, and he made it. But, man, I don't care. I really don't. I mean, if that's once every 20 plays, I'm sorry. You're going three and out five, six times before that play happens, and you get a fresh set of downs. So it's all about consistency with your ball location in the NFL. The NFL is not about unbelievable plays for touchdowns. It's about first downs, quite frankly.
Yeah.
And if you don't demonstrate the consistency at the quarterback position to do that in what is now a passing league, by all accounts, I don't know how he's going to be ready to help you, certainly not right away. And, I mean, there's no indication that it's getting any better right now.
Hey, Chris, I got to ask you this. Not for – really, this isn't for Bills fans. This is for my own personal interest, which I do from time to time here on the show. Kazir White, the safety out of West Virginia, my younger cousin, how'd he look down there? I've seen different things on him saying that he's looking good, but how'd he look to you?
He had a pick yesterday.
All right.
Made a nice play. It was a little bit of a gift kind of throw, but hey, you're in the right spot. Make the play.
Right.
I think there were a couple of times early in the week where, because he seems kind of high cut to me in terms of his body type, where sometimes he'd get caught up in his feet, and his hip flip would compromise his coverage ability. Right. So I think just on what I saw over a few days of practice, I think if he can just clean up his footwork and get his flip right, you know, he should be able to handle, you know, he's a safety, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think he's definitely a safety. The tough thing for the safeties here is they put him in these one-on-ones, you know, and line him up as a corner.
Yeah.
And I don't really think that's a fair fight, to be honest right, with you, right. When they put him up against receivers. And he had trouble with that. So I think you put him in the middle of the field and put him there. And I think he can help you. I don't know whether they consider him more of a guy that can cover half the field or whether he's more of a down-in-the-box guy. You could probably speak better than I could. Mm-hmm. But I thought as the week went on, he was getting more and more comfortable. He looked a little nervous on Tuesday.
Gotcha.
He's good size, Tyler. I just looked him up, 6'2".
Oh, he's a down-in-the-box type
yeah.
guy. Big hitter.
Yeah.
Big hitting safety. But he probably does need some work. Cause and at West Virginia, that's what they use him and was down in the box. And you help out in the run game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, Chris, last thing. I understand you came across the greatest omelet with double cheese and mushroom of all time at Spot of Tea down there in Mobile, the greatest breakfast place in America.
Yeah, I didn't have anything with mushrooms.
Oh, I got bad
intel. I had a
Western
the first day, and I usually hold the cheese, Murph.
Wait a minute, you had breakfast there 2 days?
Of course, we go every day.
Man, that place is the best.
It is very good.
Yeah.
We had a waiter who had a whole lot of attitude on him, too. It was pretty entertaining. He and I were going back and forth for a while.
A little clash?
Really?
Well, yeah. I had an empty plate, and he goes, you want me to box that up for you? I'm like, oh, you're hilarious, buddy.
You know? Yeah, good thing you're getting out of town there soon.
It was Southern smack against New York cynicism. It was working really well back and forth, let me tell you.
Clash of cultures.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll see how his tip looked after the after the breakfast. I tipped him well. He was fine.
Thanks, Chris. Great job down there. Thanks for joining us today. We appreciate it.
All right. Take it easy.
Chris Brown, Bills Insider, BuffaloBills.com, about life on the road in Mobile, Alabama. Spot of Tea, greatest breakfast place in America.
Speaking of, is lunch here yet?
I don't know. We're going to break and find out. We're back with more in a moment. Chris actually mentioned his conversation with former Jets quarterback and ESPN college football analyst Greg McElroy. We'll hear that interview coming up when we return. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Donald Jones in our One Buffalo studio. Hello to those of you listening on the radio side, WGR Sports Radio 550, our flagship radio station in Buffalo. Those tuned in on the simulcast on MSG, happy to have you all. Thanks again to Chris Brown for joining us, kind of putting a bow on the Senior Bowl practice week. The game itself is coming up on Saturday, right? Do I have this right? 3 p.m. on Saturday, the Senior Bowl, the North versus South. I'll tell you what, NFL Network, we watched it here yesterday. I went home and watched some more of it yesterday. They do a great job of Senior Bowl coverage. They mm-hmm. really do. I mean,
yeah.
Mike Mayock and those guys, Charles Davis, Andrew Siciliano, they do their homework. And so by the time you're watching it, you can learn a lot about these prospects.
You can learn a lot about those players, backstories, everything.
Yeah.
Those dudes, they definitely know a lot. And it's like during the NFL season, they're just studying college football.
Yeah.
And they know which guys, for the most part, are the prospects, the senior guys that are going to end up in the Senior Bowl, and they're doing so much homework on them that, like you said, once you're watching the practices or the game, you can learn a lot about those guys. The cameras are, like, right in the huddles with the coaches, so you can hear sometimes you can hear the coaches calling plays, teaching them different things. It's great coverage down there.
They'll be on there again, I'm sure, on NFL Network later today. Our Twitter poll today deals with the Bills' free agency and impending free agency, right? March 14th. They can negotiate with their own, obviously. Want to know from you, with a long list of Bills free agents, we believe there's about 18 unrestricted free agents. Who's the most important Buffalo Bills free agent, the guy they have to re-sign? What do you think? The phone lines are open, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-552-550 or on Twitter at John Murphy Show. Our Twitter poll 64% of you say E.J. Gaines, the corner, is the most important free agent they have to re-sign. 17% say Kyle Williams. 15% say Preston Brown. 4% have somebody else in mind. We've got more than 1,500 votes in so far. Let us know what you think. 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Speaking of the Senior Bowl, speaking of Chris Brown, Chris has been down there this week for us in Mobile, Alabama, and he had a chance to talk to the guy he mentioned a little while ago, Greg McElroy, former college football quarterback, former Jets quarterback, ESPN college analyst. Chris Brown talked with Greg McElroy about some of the quarterback prospects at the Senior Bowl.
Chris Brown here at the Senior Bowl, along with Greg McElroy, the ESPN college football analyst. And, you know, first question for you, being a quarterback yourself, you've played in this game. What is this week like for them, you know, getting up and running fast and trying to adapt to a scheme in a hurry?
Well, it was a little different for me because I played in kind of the prototypical pro-style offense. But for a lot of these guys now, with the way that college football's gone, this is their first experience running a system from under center and making audibles at the line of scrimmage and things like that. So it's a new experience for a lot of these guys. One that's a little bit different for me, though, was throwing to guys that I wasn't used to. I didn't have Julio Jones outside. You know? It was a lot of fun to be a part of it, and I know these guys have relished the opportunity.
First day is always a little tough because, like you said, there's new guys to throw to. Looked like the guys for the North squad were having a little trouble kind of finding that timing out there. Do you kind of expect things to get better as the week goes along? Is that just natural, or is it a tough road to hoe?
Well, it's tough. I mean, the first day is the toughest. Yeah. I mean, the biggest thing, and I think most coaches will tell you, and most talent evaluators will tell you, is, look, the first day better be your worst day. And then day two, you get a little more comfortable, a little more accurate, a little more confident, and then progress as the week goes on. And then ultimately having a nice game on Saturday is kind of the way that you'd like to have the week go. But you would hope that these guys would feel exponentially better on day two than they did on day one. And that's to be expected. The passing game takes time. And usually the defense is going to be a little further ahead than the offense when it comes to the beginning part of the week. So it's tough for those guys to gel at quarterback with the wideouts, but it's also tough for them to gel with the offensive line, too, and making sure they're comfortable in protection.
A lot of people think the Bills are going to be one of several teams in the market for a quarterback, and maybe that's the problem. When there's a lot of demand and not a tremendous supply, it's kind of hard to get up the board to get up to the top where you know those guys are going to come off because quarterbacks always seem to get pushed up. So just what's your perspective knowing the Bills are sitting there at 21 and 22? What's realistic for them in terms of what might be sitting there and where they may have to go if they really like somebody?
Yeah, I think it's going to be real expensive to get into the top 10. I know that most people have projected the quarterbacks to go anywhere from 1 to 13. And really there's four quarterbacks that everyone kind of has their eye on, two of which are on display here in Baker Mayfield and Josh Allen from Wyoming. The other two being Sam Darnold and Josh Rosen. They'll likely be long gone by the time 21 rolls around. So it'd be real expensive to get up into the top half if they were to take a project player, which I know they're probably not very interested in. That would probably come off the board maybe around, you know, 30 or 40 in that vicinity, depending on when you want to get that fifth-year option for the quarterback, too. So Lamar Jackson's likely the fifth guy. It just kind of depends on how things shake out. He's an intriguing prospect, a Heisman Trophy winner as well. So it's a fascinating quarterback draft because there's a lot of talent and there's good depth, but every single guy has question marks. And I think that it's one of those things, too, is how comfortable are you taking a guy with those question marks, and would you be willing to adapt an offense around him? For instance, for Baker Mayfield, he might be the best player we've seen in college football in quite some time, but is he going to be able to mold into the traditional style of offense, or do you want to kind of create an offensive mentality involving RPOs, involving some of those zone read concepts that he ran so effectively at Oklahoma? So I think it's going to be a fascinating draft to watch, and I would expect all four of those guys to come off the board a lot earlier than most would project because it is such a needy position for teams in the top 10.
Knowing that a lot of hay is in the barn on these quarterbacks already, who has maybe the biggest sell job to do, whether it's these interviews, whether it's, you know, all of these pre-draft events? Who's got the toughest sell job? They're all talented. They're all going to go early, but who's got to do the most convincing maybe that they can be the face of a franchise?
You know, it's kind of tough to say because I think, you know, people have questioned Baker Mayfield's immaturity. I just don't see it. I think he plays the game with the chip on his shoulder. Yeah. And I'd absolutely, if I were an owner or I was a head coach, I would absolutely roll the dice on him in a heartbeat because I know how much the game means to him. So if I were to go to a different direction, Josh Rosen from UCLA, there's question marks as to, you know, how much he loves the game. Can he live without the game? Things like that. So I think that's something that he'll have to worry about. Darnold, he threw a lot of interceptions, a lot of turnovers this past year. So is that part of his makeup, or is that because he was pressing and didn't have the supporting cast that he once had? And then Josh Allen, he had the 56% completion percentage. So all of them have questions, but if I were to rank them as far as the ones that were going to be the toughest to answer, it would probably have to do with Josh Rosen or Baker Mayfield, just because people will question how much Baker, with his maturity, and is he capable of handling a franchise that's worth multiple billions of dollars, and Josh Rosen, how passionate is he truly about the game? I think both guys are tremendous talents, and I don't have problems with any of the top four, to be frank.
All right. Well, thanks very much for the insight. We appreciate it. That's Greg McElroy, ESPN college football analyst here at the Senior Bowl, a Senior Bowl alum to boot.
That is Chris Brown reporting from the Senior Bowl. John Murphy and Donald Jones here back in our One Buffalo studio. A lot of quarterback talk there, and going to be a lot of quarterback talk regarding the Bills. It's starting to crystallize, though, Donald, where everybody believes that the top four, Darnold, Josh Rosen, Josh Allen, and Baker Mayfield, and then everybody else. My question for you is, how much could or what might that change between now and the end of April when the draft is? There's still 3 months away.
Oh, yeah.
You think it'll change? Is somebody else going to jump into that top four? Is somebody going to fall out? I mean, maybe Josh Allen's performance, underwhelming performance, it seems, this week at the Senior Bowl would make him a little bit further down from that group.
Quarterbacks are always interesting. There are all of the rest of the positions, you have guys who can rise up the board. Quarterback is a little bit different because you can have a great pro day, you can have a great combine, you can have a great game here, and you still might not truly rise up the board like that. Now, you can fall if you're terrible in any of those events, but if you even if you have great events, they're like, we're always going to refer back to what we see out of you on tape from college.
Right.
Every other position is like, you can run a 40 and just climb up the boards, you know. So I'm not sure. I would think that if one would be falling right now, it would be Josh Allen. But I think we also get caught up in the fact that we've seen him have two bad days.
Yeah.
You know, and I would think that coaches, smart coaches out there, are going to look at the big picture. Now, his accuracy and things like that were a question in college as well, when you talk about his completion percentage and all of that stuff involved. But I would think that they're going to look at the big picture and still look at the upside that he will have, his body type, prototypical type of quarterback, and still say, we can work with this kid. We can work on that stuff.
That's a really good point. Most of us are just getting into this process now. You know, we've been following the Bills, following the NFL. Most of us are just getting into this process now, aware of who Josh Allen is, all these other guys. But this is our real first exposure to it. For a true bona fide NFL talent evaluator, a scout, you know Josh Allen. You've seen his games. You've seen the caliber of competition. You've seen his inaccuracy issues. I heard Bill Polian on ESPN. He's at the Senior Bowl this week talking about this today. Like, you know, this is not our first impression of these guys.
Right.
You might say it might be your first impression, might be our first impression. But for scouts and people who do this for a living, they have a book already on Josh Allen.
They have a book. When you're in college and you're talked about as a possible prospect, I don't care what school you could be at, Mount Union in Ohio, a Division III, Wisconsin Whitewater, or you could be at Alabama. If you're a prospect, there are scouts at your practices every day. There are scouts coming to your games. So they know everything about you. They have been calling your parents. They have been calling your high school coaches, high school teachers, to learn everything that they need to learn about you. They know everything about these players. We're just getting to learn these players right now.
Yeah.
But the scouts already know. And the scouts have all – really right now, I look at it like the scouts are just being reminded of certain things. So, all right, let me go back and look on film. He made this crazy throw. Did I see that on tape in a game type of setting? He just ran a crazy 40. Did he play at that speed or something like that? So they're just really reaffirmed, or I would think reaffirmed is a good word that you could use about these prospects. But then you have guys that do climb up the board, and they will – the blaze of 40 or have a great game like this. Like, I look back at a couple years ago with Carson Wentz. Carson Wentz had a very good Senior Bowl. And Carson Wentz, the scouts already had him going high.
Yeah.
His Senior Bowl really just confirmed it.
Right.
And so that's what I'm saying. The scouts know everything about these players. Events like this, the Senior Bowl, Combine, Pro Days, they really just reaffirm things.
The Senior Bowl practices continue down in Mobile today. The game itself coming up on Saturday, 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And you can follow that on the NFL Network. All right, we're going to take a break. Want to get your thoughts on the Bills' class of free agents, their own? Who's the top priority for them to re-sign? We'll take your phone calls on that at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Lines wide open right now. Give us a call. The John Murphy Show returns in a moment. From One Bills Drive, this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy, Donald Jones. Pro Bowl coming up. We talked about Senior Bowl. Pro Bowl is this weekend. That's Sunday. But tonight, Donald, from the ESPN Wide World of Sports Complex, tonight, 9 o'clock, the NFL Skills Showdown. Second year they've done this. Epic Pro Bowl dodgeball, kick-tack-toe, gridiron gauntlet, precision passing. This has just got fun written all over tonight.
Man,
this is must-see TV tonight.
The dodgeball. I love dodgeball. Uh-huh. When I was in school, dodgeball was one of my favorite games. I mean, I love all of the events. I love to watch them, the wide receivers, the quarterbacks. But the dodgeball is the funnest one to watch. For me, it would be the funnest to actually play. I went to Sky Zone with my son a couple weeks ago, and we were playing dodgeball with a bunch of other people. It was just the best.
They've got this best hands competition, four receivers, two from each conference, catch a series of passes, diving catch, one-handed, over the shoulder, and it's like timed. You got to do it before you got to execute before you move on to the next thing. That'd be right up your alley, right? Make a one-handed catch, make a two-handed catch, go to the next station, make a over-the-shoulder catch. You'd be all over that.
I would love to. I would definitely be all over that. The one-handed catch, you know, my hands aren't that big. From last year, Odell Beckham performed very well in the one-handed part. We know that's his thing. But it's fun, man. It's fun to really watch and see all of these guys having fun out there, kind of letting their hair down a little bit, just having fun with each other. These guys are, like, battling against each other on different teams all throughout the course of the year, and now they get to have fun.
Jarvis Landry involved last year making the catches. Too bad they didn't have a
know
you know where I'm
going
with that, and I won't say it. Taking the head off an opposing safety. They didn't have that competition.
Yeah,
Jarvis
right.
Landry.
Jarvis Landry, he actually caught a pass and threw the ball at the official.
Yeah, he's a special player. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Pro Football Hall of Fame, and we're going to talk about special teams and how the Bills special teams improved dramatically from the 2016 season to 2017. We'll talk with Rick Gosselin coming up when we return. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Radio Network Sports Update.
The update comes from One Bills Drive. Bills coaches and personnel evaluators in Mobile for the final day of workouts at the Senior Bowl. Head coach Sean McDermott, along with his coordinators, Brian Daboll on offense, Leslie Frazier on defense. They're there with GM Brendan Bean and his personnel department, watching the prospects on the field. Today, the last day of the Bonafide Senior Bowl practices, the game coming up Saturday afternoon in Mobile. Most teams stay through the practices and do not stay for the game. Rob Gronkowski is on the Patriots injury list for Super Bowl 52, listed with a concussion on the initial injury report. The report that came out yesterday said Gronkowski would not have practiced had New England taken the field. So it's the first time the Patriots have acknowledged that Gronkowski suffered a concussion, knocked out of the Patriots championship game victory over the Jacksonville Jaguars last Sunday. Gronkowski was present at the Patriots facility yesterday, but they did not practice. John Lynch, general manager of the San Francisco 49ers, says that it makes too much sense for the Niners to sign Jimmy Garoppolo. They are expected to do that. They hold the option to slap the franchise tag on him, and Lynch says they'll have to do that, but he's really looking for a long-term deal. And Saints GM Mickey Loomis says just like Drew Brees wants to stay in New Orleans, they want Drew Brees to stay in New Orleans. He said there have not been any negotiations since the end of the season a couple of weeks ago. The Pro Bowl, the Skills Showdown, we just talked about it a moment ago. That's coming up tonight in Orlando, the Pro Bowl site this year, 9 o'clock tonight on ESPN. Vince McMahon, the founder of World Wrestling Entertainment, is getting set to announce it'll make another attempt at pro football. McMahon may use the name XFL, the ill-fated football league he co-owned back in 2001. And the Sabres look for their third win in a row tonight. They take on the Canucks in Vancouver. That's a face-off at 10 o'clock tonight. If you haven't been paying attention, Jack Eichel is playing extremely well heading into the All-Star weekend. He goes into tonight's game on a 7-game point streak, 14 points in those 7 games, the fourth longest active streak in the National Football League. And there you go, the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Donald Jones with Hour 3 of the John Murphy Show. A couple of things to keep an eye on, obviously, this next week, the Super Bowl coming up in Minnesota. And before that, they will vote for the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And also, the special teams rankings are out for the 2017 season. Rankings compiled by our next guest, longtime pro football writer. He's covered the NFL for 44 years, the Lions, the Giants, Chiefs, Cowboys, a Pro Football Hall of Fame voter, and he is now part of the Talk of Fame Network. Very happy to have Rick Goslin on the phone line with us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Rick, thanks for joining us again. It's John Murphy and Donald Jones here. We had you back in, I want to say, November when we discussed Cookie Gilchrist as a possible Hall of Famer. You made some interesting points. I don't know that it had any traction. He's not a finalist, obviously, this year, but you made some interesting points. Is there any hope for a guy like Cookie, you think, down the road?
No, he's in the senior pool. His modern era eligibility's done, and this senior pool is an abyss. Every franchise thinks it has three or four players that have been unfairly treated in the process. And you add it up, that's 80 candidates there, and we get to bring out one or two a year. So it's everybody in the senior pool's long shot, as is Cookie.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about this year's senior poll, or senior finalists anyway. One of them has been in there for a long time, longtime Packers guard Jerry Kramer, who has been up there for a long time, never been elected to the Pro Football Hall of Fame. What kind of a chance would he have, and what's held him out of the Hall of Fame this long, do you think?
Well, I wasn't in for most of those sessions when he was
That's
the,
all
when
he
was
doing
first
it.
Eligible in the 70s, yeah. But I think he's got a good shot because this is very likely the last chance he'll have. This is the second time he's been brought out of the senior committee, and it's rare we bring guys out a second or a third time. There's a credibility issue right now with the Hall of Fame involving Kramer, because the Hall of Fame selection committee picks the all-decade team, and this team voted Jerry Kramer a first-team all-decade guard from the 1960s. In 1969, they asked this selection committee to pick the 50th anniversary team, the NFL's best players first 5 decades. They put Kramer on that team as one of the two guards, and also they voted the best player at each position, quarterback, running back, wide receiver, and it was the who's who of pro football. 14 of the 15 players voted the best at their position the first half of the century are in. The guy that's not is Jerry Kramer.
Huh.
So how can this committee pick him, the greatest guard in the first 50 years, one of the greatest players the first 50 years, and then turn around and not put him in a Hall of Fame? I think there's a credibility issue. I think he's the single biggest omission or oversight in Canton right now.
Wow.
Bill Murphy, you started to talk about special teams, and then you started to talk about the senior finalists. I thought you were about to bring up Steve Tasker.
Well, Steve.
In the senior pool.
He's not in the senior classification yet, is he, or is he, Rick?
No, he's still modern era. And,
yeah.
You know, we made some strides the last couple of years. We put in Ray Guy. We put in Morton Anderson. That brings the number of kicking game specialists in the Hall of Fame to 3. Which still isn't enough. You know, I think a guy like Steve Tasker has a spot. You know, Bill Bates, they created that Pro Bowl position for him, especially days back in the early 90s. I think in kick returners, White Shoes Johnson was voted the best kick returner on the 75th anniversary team. He's the only member of the 75th anniversary team not enshrined, and he's never been discussed.
Hmm.
How can he be picked as the best return specialist the first 75 years and never be discussed? That's still a hurdle we've got to get over regarding this committee and special teams, because they're not buying Tasker, they're not buying White Shoes Johnson, they're not buying guys that had limited snaps. Now the interesting thing coming up is people think Devin Hester is the first ballot Hall of Famer. You know, we'll see. They haven't put a whole lot of stock in special teamers, but I think Tasker should be in the room. A player of his skills needs to be discussed. And that's one of the problems I've got. Not enough people are cycled through this room.
Rick, this is a semi-serious question. If Johnson's name was just Billy Johnson and not Billy White Shoes Johnson, would he be a candidate? I mean, how much does that help him out to have a nickname like that?
That hasn't helped him out at all.
Okay.
He's never been discussed.
Okay.
The fact he's on the 75th anniversary team didn't help him out yet.
Okay.
You know, you got Brian Mitchell. He's another guy that should be considered. Guys like Mel Gray, you know, great return specialist. Even a Josh Cribbs deserves to be discussed. You know, let him get into the process. Let's talk about him and let the process play out. If we think Steve Tasker is a Hall of Famer, then we'll put him in. But, and I tell people in Dallas here, you are not a Hall of Fame candidate until you're a finalist, until they're talking about you.
Yeah.
And we only talk about 15 players a year, and we do it the day before a Super Bowl. So until Steve Tasker gets in the room, he's not a Hall of Fame candidate.
There are 15 finalists for the Pro Football Hall of Fame, modern era finalists for the Pro Football Hall of Fame. They'll be voted on 9 days away and selection Saturday in Minneapolis, the day before Super Bowl 52. And our guest, Rick Gosselin, will have one of those votes. Is there a slam dunk on the list of 15, Rick? Anybody who's definitely going to make it?
Well, they perceive Ray Lewis as the slam dunk. And we had Ray Lewis on our show this week, and he told us he's the greatest middle linebacker to ever play the game. So if Ray's got a vote, Ray's going in first ballot. So I think he's the one guy you could probably pencil in, and I wouldn't say ink, but I'd say pencil in. I think there'll be a wide receiver, probably an offensive lineman, and a defensive back, and then there'll be a wild card. There's always seems to be a wild card. Ed Sable was a wild card. Ralph Wilson that one year was a wild card.
Yeah.
Somebody, when you go into the room, you don't think he's got much of a chance, and next thing you know, they're standing on the podium introducing as a member of that class. So there will be a wild card, somebody you don't see coming. You know, possibly an Everson Walls, you know, who's a Dallas guy. He's a finalist in the 20th and final year of his eligibility. You know, he could be the dark horse here.
Rick, you said there would be a wide receiver. Now, there were two names on that list that most people would think.
No, there are three names in that list.
Well, I'm talking about that most people would think would get in this year, and that would be either a Terrell Owens or Randy Moss.
Not okay. Isaac Bruce.
I mean, Isaac Bruce, definitely. But those two guys, Randy Moss and Terrell Owens, I mean, which one of those guys would you think would be, and I know you get a vote, but which one of those guys do you think would get in first?
Well, in my eyes, I would go Moss because of the quality of catch. I don't care about the quantity, how many catches, how many yards. What did you do with the football after you caught it? He played one less season than Owens. He had more touchdowns. He had 13 more 100-yard games, and he averaged almost a yard more per catch. So based on quality of catch, I'd say Moss. But I think this debate is going to be very interesting because the Owens camp is going to say, look, if you're going to keep T.O. out because of his attitude, here's Randy Moss who says he plays what he wants to play and a guy who quit on the Raiders. So if you're going to ding Owens for off-the-field character, then you've got to you know put Moss under the same microscope. And I think both those guys, I'm really looking forward to this debate. I could see us going 2 hours just talking about these two guys. And then we'll let the process play itself out. Who made the better case?
T.O.'s attitude still a problem, right? Even though he's been relatively quiet about it over the last 11 months or so?
Not really.
No?
I mean, Harry Carson wrote the Hall and spoke. He said he wanted his name removed from the ballot. He said, I don't want to go through this another year. I want my name off the ballot. Well, they didn't take him off the ballot, and they eventually put him in. So it doesn't really matter. It really doesn't matter at all, what a guy wants to say. We're kind of above that on this committee. You know, we hear it every year. And what bothers me is there are 17 players on this ballot, including the two senior candidates. There are 14 of the 17 were all-decade players. We're going to tell 9 all-decade guys there are 5 players better. And yet, if we don't put Owens in, all the clamor will be about Owens. What about Alan Faneca? He went to more Pro Bowls than Owens, considerably more, went to 9. He won more championships than Owens won. He was a first-team all-decade player. Owens was a second-team. There's no clamor about Alan Faneca. And he's got the best resume maybe in this class.
Mm-hmm.
But it's all about Owens and Moss this class. Forget about the fact we got 5 offensive linemen that are all-decade, all Hall of Fame worthy. We got 2 safeties that are Hall of Fame worthy. We got 2 corners that are Hall of Fame worthy. Edger James is the best running back not in the Hall of Fame. And yet it doesn't matter about any of those players. It's all about Moss and Owens this year.
Rick, didn't
that's wrong because we have a 17-player agenda, not a 1-player agenda.
Rick, didn't you know wide receiver is the sexiest position in the game?
Yeah. And I'll tell you the other thing that bothers me, it's a different game. Back when Paul Warfield and Lance Allworth and Drew Pearson were playing, they got mugged every step of the way. They had to fight for every inch of space under pass route. It was hard. You could lead the league in receptions in the 70s with 50 catches. Now, you can't hit the quarterback. You can't hit the receivers. There's no fear about going across the middle because Jack Tatum's not there to club you. So it's a game of pitch and catch. If you're a good receiver, a quality receiver, you ought to have 100 catches in a season, and you ought to have 1,000 catches in your career. And it's tough because the numbers are all inflated because of the way the game has gone. They've taken essentially defense out of the game. So it's tough getting a real handle on Moss and Owens. You know, I heard them people say they're the two and three best receivers in football history. Mm. I don't buy that. But because of the numbers, that's what they're saying. What people don't understand is all the numbers are inflated.
With Rick Gosselin, he's got a Hall of Fame vote. He's a Pro Football Hall of Fame voter. He's from the Talk of Fame Network, host of Talk of Fame Network, longtime pro football writer. Brian Urlacher, first-time finalist, former Bears linebacker. How strong a candidate would you think he is, Rick?
If Ray Lewis wasn't on the ballot, he may be the favorite.
Hmm.
The problem is we've never put in two middle linebackers in the same class. And I think that's probably going to hurt Urlacher. Urlacher is a Hall of Famer. If he doesn't go in this year, he probably goes in the second year. I think both he and Moss Lewis are deserving of the honor in this class. But again, it's rare we put two players in from the same position, and it's very rare we put two middle linebackers in the same year.
And if you got kind of a logjam, you got 5 of the 15 modern era finalists are offensive linemen. Somebody's going to get bumped off, right? It's not going to be a whole offensive line class here.
No, and my concern is, a number of years back, we had 3 pass rushers in the finals. We had Chris Dolman, Richard Dent, and Charles Haley. And they all got knocked out in the vote from 15 to 10 because they split the room. If you were a Dolman guy, you didn't vote for the other two, and they knocked each other out. I could see 3 of the linemen getting knocked out in the cuts of 10 for that reason.
Yeah.
If you're a Faneca guy, you're not going to vote Hutchinson. If you're a Baselli guy, you're not going to vote Jacoby. If you're a Mulway guy, you're not going to vote for any of those guys. So I could see 3 of those guys getting knocked out. I think the favorite is probably Baselli. He made the cut to 10 last year, and he plays the sexy left tackle position. So if I had a pencil in a favorite, I'd probably say Baselli based on what we saw last year.
Rick, what about the safeties? You got 2 safeties in here, John Lynch, Brian Dawkins. Either one of those guys gets in before the other one, in your opinion?
Well, yeah. Lynch has been up a number of times. Dawkins was an all-decade pick. Lynch was not. I mean, they played really 2 different types. Lynch was more of a rover and a run stopper, and Dawkins, played on both sides of the line of scrimmage and was, interceptor and a sacker, and he was more of a utility, Swiss Army knife, whereas Lynch was up there to be physical and take down ball carriers. So you really can't – that's the tough part about the safety position. We've only got 8 pure safeties in the Hall of Fame, and the guy Paul Krause, who holds the record with 81 career interceptions, a record that will probably never be broken, took him 14 years to get in. And when Krause came up, they said, well, when you put the tape on, you never see Paul Krause on tape. He's so far back. Well, that's what they asked him to do in Minnesota. He had a great front that crippled people eaters, and Bud Grant said, you are the last line of defense. And he stood back there and was a great last line of defense with those 81 picks. And then they look at Steve Atwater, one of the best box safeties in history. He had 24 career interceptions. So they say, well, where's his interceptions? So if you were a box guy like Lynch or Atwater, they're going to ding you for lack of plays. And if you were a deep guy like a Johnny Robinson or a Paul Krause, they're going to ding you for not making any tackles. It's like they're looking for something to find wrong with every safety candidate.
Yeah.
I think both these guys are Hall of Fame worthy. If people, show some respect for the queue and say, Lynch is due. But the fact is Dawkins was an all-decade guy, and he's probably got as good or better case than John.
Rick, the contributor category, Bobby Bethard, who is in the contributor category, built the championship Redskins teams, built the Chargers, success with Miami. How strong a candidate is he, and is there a bias at all maybe in the room against contributors as far as
it
to the Hall?
No. The only contributor that hasn't made it yet was Tagliabue. We put in DeBartolo, we put in Jerry Jones, we put in Ron Wolf and Bill Polian. I would expect Bethard to go in pretty easily. He was a part of 5 different franchise champions. He was a scout at the Chiefs as well. And he was at Miami, he was in Washington. He was saying he was a master builder. And Dan Rooney once said he's the smartest guy in the room. So I would expect no problems with Bobby Bethard come Selection Sunday, so Saturday.
The Hall of Fame vote is coming up the day before the Super Bowl, the week from this Saturday. Rick Gosselin from the Talk of Fame Network talking to us about that. And also going to talk to us a little bit for a few minutes here, if you would, Rick, about your special teams rankings, an annual event in the NFL postseason. Rick Gosselin's special teams rankings that you started several years ago. And a big jump up for the Buffalo Bills this year, all the way up to the 7th spot, up 17 spots from last year. First of all, can you tell us the methodology, Rick? How do you choose the special teams rankings in the NFL each year?
Okay, I've been doing this for almost 40 years now.
Yeah.
And initially it started out with 14 categories. Frank Gann's old-time special teams coach, the Chiefs, back in 80, gave it to me. And I've picked it up ever since. And I've added categories. So Now there are 22 categories. I've added giveaways, takeaways, penalties, block kicks, kick security. So what I have is 22 categories, and I rank all 32 teams 1 through 32. If you had the best kick return unit, you got 1 point. If you had the worst, you got 32 points. You add up the cumulative total of all 22 of those categories, and you get a number, the total. The Rams won it. They were the first team ever to come in with under 200 points. They had 196 points. Buffalo finished seventh with 309. The Giants finished last with 512. And that's how it comes about. There are 22 categories. You name it. I got it all covered. You know, kickoff, kick coverage, punt coverage, punting, field goals, net punt, opponent net punt. I got it all covered. And that's why they like it. The coaches like it. It's so comprehensive. It's got every base covered.
And coaches do like it. I remember the late, great Bruce DeHaven talked a lot about your rankings. What made the Rams so special? And obviously, the numbers add up. They're under 200. But as you look at that team, what made them such a solid special teams unit this year?
Look at the Pro Bowl team. They have the NFC Pro Bowl kicker, NFC Pro Bowl punter, NFC Pro Bowl kick returner, NFC Pro Bowl deep snapper. If you got those four bases covered, you're going to have pretty good special teams. They finished in the top 10 in 18 of the 22 categories.
Wow.
That is amazing. And this is one of the greatest special team stories, special teams rankings that I've ever seen. And I think that's a big part of the reason that team went from the bottom of the league to the top in 1 year. You know, I think Sean McVay did a great job in offense, Wade Phillips in defense, but the special teams were better at what they did than either of the offense defense. What surprised me was Sean McVay's an offensive guy, and he still placed a premium on special teams. It's all about commitment. If you commit to be good on special teams, you can be good at special teams. If it was me, I'd always hire a defensive guy because a defensive guy is more concerned with the three aspects of the game. He's not going to do things offensively to put the defense in bad positions, which is why Sean McDermott was a good hire with his defensive background. I knew he would come in and put some sort of importance on special teams, and I think it's reflected in the rankings.
Hey, Rick, the Bills jumped up, what, 17 spots. From last year. How much did Steven Hauschka actually contribute, in your opinion, to, well, you have the numbers, how much did he contribute to them jumping up those 17 spots?
Yeah, I mentioned him in the story that I did. You know, when they signed him in free agency from Seattle, I thought that was a pretty big hit for Seattle and a really good get for the Bills because he's a long field guy, kickoff guy. He's as good as complete a kicker as you're going to find in the league, and I think that's a big part. Like I said, you got to be settled in your kicker, punter, returner, and deep snapper. If you get those four positions settled and productive, you're going to have a good year. And they don't have any worries with Hoskin out kicker for the next several years, for whatever the length of his contract. I mean, this guy is one of the better kickers in this league.
I note in your rankings this year, Rick, that the top three teams in your special teams rankings, all of them playoff teams, four of the top seven playoff teams. Clearly, special team success equates to a winning record typically, right? You must find that over the years.
And look at the three teams that didn't make it in the top seven. Baltimore 9-7, Dallas 9-7, Detroit 9-7. You know, there's a correlation. You know, Bill Belichick is a big fan of these rankings. And he's as a head coach, he probably places a greater emphasis on special teams than anyone I've ever seen. His roots are special teams. He broke into the NFL as a special teams assistant. So they're always good. The other move, Baltimore. John Harbaugh was a longtime special teams coach. They've been in the top five, six consecutive years. Special teams helps the Ravens win games. Special teams helps the Patriots win games. Special teams help the Rams win a division title and get back to consequentiality.
Rick, when you talk about a head coach placing emphasis on special teams, how does that manifest itself practically? Are we talking about number of players on the roster that were on teams or practice time devoted to special teams? How do you see that playing out?
Okay, and I touched base on the fossil story.
Yeah.
Time and time again, I've seen offensive guys who dress a fifth or sixth wide receiver. Never even playing a game, but they want that extra receiver dressed. So when you dress him, you're not dressing a linebacker or a defensive back, a guy that can tackle. So you wind up shorting your special teams coach. And I talked to John Fossil. He said McVay came to him at the start of each week and said, you got the 43rd, 4th, 5th, and 6th spots on the roster. This is your plan. Go ahead and make your plan. Those guys are going to be there. I'm making a commitment to your specialist. I'm going to give you these four guys. And when you have that security to game plan, you're not finding out that Saturday. Well, guess what? My gunner is down, this week. And then you got to replace the gun. If you make the commitment, and it's a commitment in practice time, too.
Yeah.
You know, I remember one coach who used to, a fairly prominent coach back in the 90s, who would blow off the final session of training camp, and it was a special teams drill.
Yeah.
You can't do that. You got to make a commitment both in personnel and in practice to be good on special teams, and that's exactly what the Rams did. McVay gave Fossil the leeway and the personnel to succeed, and he did.
Rick, it's interesting that when you talk about the Bills, they jumped up 17 spots. You talked about Sean McDermott being a good hire because he was going to bring that emphasis in special teams. We saw that all the way back before the season started in training camp when they were cutting down and they had a running back, Jonathan Williams, who they let go, and everybody felt like they needed to keep here, but he wasn't going to contribute on their special teams. He ended up signing somewhere else, but they let him go because he could be a good backup for us, but not if he's not going to be able to play special teams.
Right, you got LeSean McCoy. You don't have to have guys going to carry the ball 200 times a season because mm-hmm. McCoy is going to get the bulk of your carries. So it's, again, like you just said, that's a personal decision you make with special teams in the back of your mind. If that's an offensive coach, he might have kept that extra running back. Hmm. Defensive coach is going to keep in mind the three aspects, offense, defense, special teams. And he does what he can with all three phases, not to put the other two phases in bad position. And if you give your special teams players that can cover, you know, the players that Bills have, you're going to benefit from it. And I think you saw that. It's all about, you know, making a commitment to players, giving your special teams coach players that he can succeed with, not leftovers on the roster. Players he can succeed with.
Rick, it's great work as usual. We thank you very much for spending a couple of minutes with us here today. Good luck with the Hall of Fame votes next week. Thanks very much.
I appreciate it, guys.
Okay.
Have a good week.
Rick Goslin from the Talk of Fame Network, talkoffamenetwork.com. His special teams rankings are there. The Bills move up 17 spots to number 7 in the league. That is significant, Donald.
That's
biggest
big.
Jump of any team in the league this year.
It shows that they have a true thought process about their team, a true emphasis on the importance of special teams. It's important to this coach, and we were just talking. I just brought it up to him that, and we kept saying this. Why? And people were calling up. They just released Jonathan Williams. Well, Rick Goslin just said it. You have LeSean McCoy. He's going to get the ball. If you have a backup player that's not going to be a starter or not really going to contribute that much, he has to be able to play special teams. You don't just have guys on your roster. Oh, he could be a good backup.
Yeah.
Well, no, you only get a certain amount of guys on your roster that
right.
you can suit up every day. So everybody has to contribute in some way, and he wasn't going to be able to contribute. That's the reason why I think we saw other players who were on the practice squad. We all know who we're talking about, who were on the practice squad not be called up till the end of the year because I don't know how good he is on special teams.
You're talking about Brandon Riley.
Right.
Say his name. We're all friends here. Hey, yeah, we're going to take a break. We want you to get involved in our Twitter poll that deals with free agency. The Bills about 5 or 6 weeks away from the free agent period. Who's the most important Buffalo Bills free agent that they have to re-sign? We'll give you the list when we return, but you know the prominent names. Well, so far on Twitter, 65% of you say cornerback E.J. Gaines is the most important free agent to re-sign. 18% say Kyle Williams. 14% say Preston Brown. Let's hear from you. The phone line's open, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. The most important Bills free agent, their own, that they need to re-sign. Give us a call. Let us know what you think. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
And welcome back to the John Murphy Show. Donald Jones here. We've been bouncing back and forth. We had a chance to talk to Chris Brown earlier. He was down at the Senior Bowl all week catching up with a lot of different national reporters. Yesterday he had a chance to catch up with the NFL Network's own Ian Rappaport. Let's hear what he had to say yesterday.
Chris Brown here at the Senior Bowl in Mobile, joined by NFL Network insider Ian Rappaport. And, you know, Ian, we know the Bills have a lot of draft capital this year, 21 and 22 in round one, couple of twos. Heck, they even got a couple of fives. But you look at where they may need to get if they want to get in the party for one of those top quarterbacks. You're going to have to give up a lot to get there.
Yeah, you are. And, you know, they did such a masterful job last year, you know, getting the extra first-round pick and still drafting a stud
right.
at corner and Tre'Davious White. And, you know, the reason you get all these picks is not necessarily to go give them away the next year and jump up. I mean, I think, you know, they can move around. They certainly have the artillery to move around. But it's not like saying, oh, well, they have, you know, two ones next to each other, taking that up and moving up to five. First of all, the evaluation has to match. You know, there's going to be, I think we could see four quarterbacks, probably at least three in the top 10. Well, you know, are those the guys they have rated as ones and everyone else not so much? Or, you know, first it comes down to the evaluation. I'm just not convinced that this is a leadership that just says, all right, we're just going to take our picks and trade them. I mean, there's value, you know, you lose value there when you just jump up and make the biggest trade you can.
What is the climate? Maybe it might be early to kind of get a feel for this, because I know a lot of the talking about potential trades goes down around combine time where guys are trying to lay the groundwork there. But what's kind of the climate that you're getting a sense for in terms of movement at the top, if there's going to be anybody even willing to move out? Because as Brandon Bean said yesterday, you got to have a dance partner.
Yeah, that's true. And that's one of the, you know, big questions. It's like we can all talk about, like, oh, you know, there's some great quarterbacks. They're going to be gone early. Everyone's going to trade up. Well, to make a trade happen, someone needs to actually want to do it. And so, like, if you're, let's say you're the Broncos, right? Well, yeah, you'll have opportunities to trade out of five. Maybe you want to just take the quarterback.
Yeah.
And there's going to be a bunch of teams there who are going to get crazy offers. You say, well, you know, what is it worth it to give up on your possible franchise quarterback? It's like with the Browns, you know, when they traded out a couple years back, yeah, they got a really good deal, and they didn't get Carson Wentz or Jared Goff. So how good is that deal really?
Yeah.
You know, and that's sort of the question.
The crystal ball is something I don't want to force into your hands, but, you know, Tyrod Taylor's got that roster bonus option coming up here in March just before free agency starts. The speculation's running rampant. I don't know if you're hearing anything with respect to that, but if you want to lay it out there as to how you think it may pan out, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple things. First of all, I'm not 100% sure that this relationship is done. You know, and I would be, what I think at this point, is they probably keep him, pay the bonus, and try to trade him if he's not their guy. They have all the options. And we've actually seen this in the past. There is precedent for picking up the option, just paying it, and, you know, trying to turn that into, you know, a trade. I mean, the Rams did it with Nick Foles. Paid his bonus. They weren't able to trade him. But at that point, I mean, Tyrod's a better player now than Nick Foles was back then. Quarterbacks are amazing commodities, and you can get some real legitimate draft picks. So for the price of a $6 million option, could the Bills get a mid-round pick, you know, a week or so later? Yeah, I think they probably could.
So you think there is a market for him, no question, if decide to do.
No question. You know, and he's a starting quarterback in the NFL. And there's just not a lot of those guys. I mean, look at the list of guys who are going to be available this year. You know, Cousins, maybe. Bortles, probably not, but maybe. Tyrod, you know, Case Keenum, maybe they franchise. I mean, where all the teams that need quarterback, where are they going to come from?
Yeah.
Right? So all of a sudden you have a guy who's a proven starter, who's a good person, which is nice, and can start in the league. Like, yeah, there's value there. And I think for the Bills, too, like, you know, if you're going to replace him, same thing I said last year at this time, you're going to replace Tyrod, who are you going to – you have to get someone that's better before you do anything with him.
Very good, Ian. We appreciate the time, as always.
All right.
NFL Network insider Ian Rappaport here at the Senior Bowl in Mobile.
And Chris Brown had a good conversation with Ian Rappaport there. The biggest thing that stands out to me about that conversation right there, Ian Rappaport thinks that the Bills will actually keep Tyrod, pick up that option, and then try to trade him. And we'll see if that's what they do, if maybe they'll get a trade partner at that point. Maybe it's draft day.
Did he say – I thought he said he's not 100% sure that it's over between
he
the
said
Bills
it, yeah, he said he's not 100% sure, right. But he said maybe that's what
– Right, that's one way.
Yeah.
I think we've accepted that. We talked about that on our list of options the other day. What do you do at quarterback? The other thing that stuck with me about Ian Rappaport was when he talked about how difficult – and this is the second or third guy to say this, including Brandon Bean – how difficult it will be to move up for the Bills or basically anybody to get to that elite quarterback level.
I think it's really hard to move up that many spots to get an elite quarterback. I mean, you're not sitting at 10 trying to move to 5. You're sitting at 20, 21 trying to get into the top 10. And just getting in the top 10 doesn't even mean that you'll get all of these guys. They might be all gone in the first 5 picks. I mean, you never know what these teams are going to do in the first round or in the top 10 picks, in the first 5 picks. So I think it's so hard to get up there. And you can make it happen if you want to. If you want to give away everything, if you truly feel that strong about a guy, you can definitely make it happen. But Brandon Bean and Coach McDermott seem like the type of guys, and they've said this, they want to be able to build a draft or build a team through the draft.
Yeah,
I don't know. They've done a lot of work to get all of these draft picks, and I don't know if they want to trade all of those draft picks away.
Yeah, somebody mentioned that the other day, and Rappaport just said that too, and used, I thought, a pretty good example of the Cleveland Browns, who moved down, you know, to get what they wanted, but also passed up on Jared Goff and Carson Wentz.
Right.
I mean, do you think they'd like to have that decision back again? I'm sure
they would. Like to have a lot of decisions back.
Yeah. let's take a call here from David in Wheatfield. Hello, David. You're on the air with us. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. I have two comments and then a question for both of you. First, I think E.J. Gaines absolutely is our top priority free agent signing. Secondly, I love Kyle Williams. He has been a warrior for us, but he is obviously on the down the slope of his career. I would love to see them be able to re-sign him, but only if it's at a reasonable price, because we have so many other needs. I don't want to see them tie up a lot of salary cap space on him. And then my question is, when they're grading out particularly linebackers, I know Preston Brown led the league this year in tackles, but like, do they look at like how many were behind the line of scrimmage, how many were within 3 yards of the line of scrimmage, how many were after the player got the first down? Do they track missed tackles, missed gap assignments, stuff like that? Because I feel like watching the games, a lot of times, you know, he was making tackles, but they were after the running back or the receiver had already gotten the first down. So I just wondering if you guys know, do they track things other than just, you know, the number of tackles?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, right, they track all numbers. I mean, they track – we talk about analytics. I mean,
they look at film. They don't even look at numbers, right?
That's the biggest thing.
Yeah.
They look at the numbers. That's a part of it. But they look at the film. They know how he fits into this defense. We were talking about this with Lorenzo earlier. They know how he would fit into this defense moving forward. And that's the biggest thing, I think, in their minds. Does he truly fit into what we want to do moving forward? Lorenzo talked about it. We always look at team speed and all of that stuff with the player. I think you have to look at Preston – and his entire picture, what the caller was just talking about. Also, just the fact that he's durable. He hasn't missed any games. The fact that he's been able to transition from defense to defense like that and basically make it seamless. Last year we had some trouble, but that everybody had trouble in that defense last year. But basically make this seamless transitions, be a leader on the defense, get everybody in the right position. These are all of the different things that – and we know how big of an emphasis – Coach McDermott puts on leadership and guys that are smart guys that are where they're supposed to be all the time, on the field, off the field. And I think that's Preston Brown. So it's going to be a tough decision for them to make on Preston.
Got a couple of minutes left. Do you have any thoughts on that? Of the Bills' impending free agents, who's the number one on your priority list? In the meantime, it's time now to play a little NFL True or False. It is brought to you by Yancey's Fancy, New York's artisan cheese. True or False? Doug Peterson, Eagles coach, a mismatch in the coaching ranks with Bill Belichick. Talking about the Super Bowl here. Doug Peterson, can he hold his own coaching against Bill Belichick? Well, now we got a double negative there. Doug Peterson is no mismatch against Belichick. I say that's true. He's not a mismatch. He can hold his own. You know, Peterson's done a good job of establishing himself as a risk taker. He'll go for it on fourth down. He'll take chances, calculated chances. And I think that's kind of what you need going up against Belichick. You know, a guy, look, the Eagles are going to be, they are underdogs for a reason. The Patriots have done this before. But Peterson, with his aggressive decision-making, with some of the decisions he makes, I think it's exactly what the Eagles are going to need to give the Patriots a fight next week.
I don't know Doug Peterson enough to really say if he's a mismatch against him or not. I do know that. So I'll go false on this one. And just because –
so it is a mismatch.
Yeah, I think it is a mismatch. Just because you have Bill Belichick, who has been in this position so many different times, and so many coaches in the past have really, for lack of a better term, choked or outcoached themselves, trying to outcoach Bill Belichick instead of letting the players do what they do best, and that's play the game on the field. And so I'll say because – Bill Belichick has been here so much. Doug Peterson hasn't, in this position as a head coach, been there that much. I would say that Bill Belichick is, or it's a mismatch.
Okay. Part two, NFL True or False. Head coaches who call plays are not going away. Or are they going away? Why do we have negatives in there? They are going away. So now you got to think, you know, you believe one thing, you got to think around this. Head coaches who call plays are not going away. True. I think that's true. Robert Mays wrote a piece for the website The Ringer about this. Head coaches, you know, who call plays, you've seen him. We talked about Adam Gase when the Bills played the Dolphins with his nose buried in his call sheet. Doug Peterson does it. Sean Payton does it, gets away with it. Mike Zimmer does it. Mike Vrabel likely to do it now in Tennessee. No, I don't think they're going away. I don't like that style. I don't like when a head coach is involved in one side of the ball or the other to the point where, like I believe Adam Gase, where he can't see the big picture. But true, they're not going away. There's always going to be guys who do that. That's how they get the jobs, quite frankly.
Yeah, right. And they get the job because most of them are coming from being a coordinator. And once they get the job, it's their decision if they want to call plays or not. And some of them, it's tough for them to give that up. They don't want to give up being a coordinator. I've been doing this. This is how I got here. I'm going to continue to do this. I'm in your ballpark there. I'll go true on this one. I'm in your ballpark and say I don't like it. I'd rather for a coach to be the CEO. But I'd add another guy, Sean McVay, a young coach, you know, who is now calling his own plays, had his team one of the best teams in the league this year. So I don't think it's going away at all.
And finally, NFL true or false. This comes from a Daniel Jeremiah piece on NFL.com. Josh Allen, he writes, is the most polarizing prospect in the 2018 NFL draft, the Wyoming quarterback. We've talked a lot this week about his, I guess, rough week at the Senior Bowl. It's not over yet, by the way. But does that make him the most polarizing prospect, the guy who people will have a positive or negative opinion about? I'm going to say false, but mostly incomplete. There are other guys that we don't even know yet coming out. You know, Baker Mayfield has the character concerns. You know, there's always going to be guys that some people like, some don't. So I'm going to go false. No, not yet. Josh Allen, you know. Daniel Jeremiah quotes a scout at the Senior Bowl saying, "We've got enormously high grades and really low grades for him. There's no middle ground out of him."
I'll go true. I'll go true just because he's a quarterback and he's so up and down. Like Daniel Jeremiah said there, you have some scouts who love him. You have some who don't like him. You have some who are going to say he's truly just way too inaccurate. You're going to have some of them that like him just because of his size at the quarterback position. So I think he is going to be the most polarizing prospect because of what I just said and just the fact that he's a quarterback and everybody's thirsty for a quarterback.
Yeah. Baker Mayfield will have a lot of people on either side.
Yeah, Baker Mayfield. And there are going to be some juniors that we're not talking about this week because they don't have a Junior Bowl, which maybe they should have a Junior Bowl. I don't know. That would be cool.
Why not?
Yeah, I mean, that's another way for them to make money, have a Junior Bowl.
The Junior Bowl.
But,
the Sophomore Bowl.
When you talk about this, another one that you would talk about is Lamar Jackson, though.
Yeah.
The kid out of the quarterback out of Louisville. He's another one that people want to know, is this kid a true NFL quarterback or should you put him over at wide receiver? So he's going to be polarizing. Josh Allen, I'll say, is the most polarizing, though.
All right, there you go. NFL True or False brought to you by Yancey's Fancy New York's Artisan Cheese. Back with more in a moment. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
And now, what have we learned from today's show?
What have we learned? Presented by Advanced Alarm, providing Western New York's homes and businesses with the finest in security and home theater, the preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. What have we learned? Lorenzo Alexander joined us in the first hour. He's a former Senior Bowl player himself, and he talked to us about his Senior Bowl experience some 14 years ago down in Mobile, Alabama.
It was great for me. I mean, because then you get to measure yourself against other kids from around the country, you know, not just in your conference and the guys that you see all the time or the guys that may just be in your workout groups wherever you may be training. So I really enjoyed it. You know, you get to see some NFL coaches, get to speak to them, get coached by some of those guys. So it was great.
It was great, even though he never got an interview with anybody, nor at the Combine. I'm stunned by that. Nobody wanted to talk to Lorenzo at the Senior Bowl or the Combine. Chris Brown joined us at the Senior Bowl from Mobile earlier on today. He talked about the interviews that we just talked about that Lorenzo never got and about how important those would be to the Bills' new regime down there in Mobile this week.
You need look no further than the draft class that came in the door last spring. You know, whether it was guys who were team captains, guys who were four-year players with a long body of work, with proven production, and I was going up and down this roster looking for some of those same qualities. That's not the end-all, be-all, of course. You got to be able to play, too. But, you know, I can see them trying to narrow things down to guys that they don't want to have to worry about what they're going to get from that player in practice in week one knowing it's going to be no different than what they get from them in Week 17.
Gus Brown on the Bills' approach to those interviews. Donald, I would imagine every team, especially this time of year, will tell you those interviews are critical. We want to look the guy in the eye and talk to him about team building and character. But you do get the sense, and I think Chris made this point, that around here now with this regime, that carries a little bit more weight than it does maybe in some other NFL teams.
Yeah. The most important part of the time period right now, and the practices really mean a lot. You can jump up and move down a draft board because you either sucked or you were really good in the practices or at the combine or at pro days, et cetera. But the most important part of this process, and coaches, GMs, they will all tell you this, is are the medical evaluations and the interviews. They want to know who you are. They can go back and look at you on tape and tell what you are as a player, but they want to know you as a person, and they want to know if you check out medically.
Yeah. Hey, our Twitter poll today, who's the most important Buffalo Bills free agent that they have to re-sign? We're still a month and a half away from the free agent deadline. You would think that the Bills are probably getting their ducks in line here to make some offers to some of these players, but our Twitter respondents, and we had about 1,700. 64%, almost two-thirds, said the most important Bills free agent they have to re-sign is cornerback E.J. Gaines. 18% said Kyle Williams. 14% said Preston Brown. 4% said somebody else of mine. I got to admit, Donald, I'm surprised.
Shocked. I'm shocked.
You're
because
shocked.
So many people love Kyle Williams.
Everybody loves Kyle.
But maybe they're just looking at the age right there and thinking the back end of that defense was so important to this team this year and how good they were. And you need E.J. Gaines to be on this roster to continue to keep that intact.
I guess, you know, it surprises me, but then I think it's a testament to how plugged in our fans, this show and Bills fans in general are, realizing that, you know, if Kyle Williams, if they can't get him re-signed, it's going to be a sad day. Okay, but they could probably move on from that. But if you start making holes in the back end of the defense, that solid back end
everything.
Of the defense, then you got to plug those holes.
Yeah.
Add it to the list, right?
So, Kyle is important in terms of leadership. He's important. And I said he was the most important, but you could look at it that way and say, look, Kyle is an older guy on this team. You need to make sure you have the back end of that defense intact so that's not an extra thing that you have to worry about. We know how those guys work back there together. We need to worry about the front end of this defense, draft some defensive linemen, draft some linebackers, get some depth up there. You take a hole off the back end, well, now that's something else that you got to worry about, including the front end of that defense.
Yeah. Got a good show coming up tomorrow, including Greg Cosell. We'll break down last weekend's championship games and a lot more as well. I want to thank our presenting sponsor, Napa Auto Parts. Find your local Napa store online at NapaOnline.com. Our production assistants, J.J. Torito, George Blass, Jeff Koltnick, Thomas Hollander, our producer, Jay Harris. We'll see you tomorrow at noon when we finish up the week on the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.